You just have to be the best, and I usually am. Same rules apply.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 114 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it is a lovely early spring day today. The weather is getting a bit better. It's a bit warmer. It's a bit brighter out.
Fresher.
Just makes me feel happier, doesn't it?
It does. And it makes me feel like the days are longer. We're getting more out of them.
Yeah.
So we should get more out of this episode.
Yeah, that follows. Why not? Why not? That's perfect. Let's tell them what's coming up.
Well, our main review on this episode is the sequel to Lego Movie, Lego Movie 2, the second part.
Imaginative title.
Wow. Inventive.
Yeah. I bet someone got paid a lot of money to come up with that.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised. Our rewatch this time around is going to be based on an Irvin Welsh book, Filth. Pure, utter filth.
Absolute filth.
Listen to our thoughts later on.
And our topic of conversation, top three acting debuts. Pretty straightforward that. Don't need to explain that one,
do
I? No
explanation needed.
And to juice you up at this stage, we're going to have a brand new game show. And do you know what it's called? Stick around and find out.
Oh, every bloody time.
Well, you never know. The game show could be called Stick Around and Find Out.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
But it's not.
That'd be shit. Yeah.
Says the guy who made up Scory Feldman.
We've got some mass debate gold later on. We're going to be masturbating over director supreme, Mr. Martin Scorsese.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, indeed, Ben. You've got it on there.
It's weird, isn't it? You kind of think to yourself, like, Christopher Nolan, Spielberg, and you forget about the master himself.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Little old Scorsese in the corner. He's going, hello, guys.
I can't wait for that.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. And we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week, and we'll give away an absolute ton of prizes.
Mm.
Now, before we get into the episode, we've got something rather interesting to share with you, haven't we?
Yeah.
Mark, do you want to fill them in?
So we've been, as you're listening to this, on the same day, we've been featured on BBC Radio 4.
Yeah.
On a very podcast special on Skip the End and other podcasts, which is pretty damn good.
Pretty good.
It is, yo. Out of the blue, we received an email from a producer at the BBC called Amanda, and she said that she puts together a weekly radio show on BBC Radio 4 Extra and a podcast called the Podcast Radio Hour. And on each episode, they discuss different podcast-related things. And the episode they were putting together was about movie podcasts, and they thought we might want to be involved. So they interviewed us, and they've used a little clip from one of our episodes. That was broadcast on BBC Radio 4 Extra today. It is then available to be downloaded as a podcast as well. So go and listen to it.
I've literally said to my mum and dad, you can go on iPlayer and listen to me talk.
I think
which is crazy.
I think I kind of went to my mum and dad and said, I made it, Ma! I'm on the BBC!
Yeah.
So it's pretty good, and we're pretty chuffed with ourselves about that.
We're really, really happy.
I think from now on we should literally be, welcome to the BBC Skip to the End podcast.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Oh yeah, we definitely won't get sued over that.
No, not at all.
That's fine. Let's get started. It's time for top three acting debuts. Now, this should be fairly self-explanatory, but there are certain rules to this. We're talking about people's theatrical film acting debuts. So we're not talking about TV shows. If they've been in TV shows before, fine, but we're talking about their first film. And we will, for the sake of argument, accept films that have premiered on Netflix or Amazon Prime.
That seems nice.
Everyone with me so far?
Yes.
So far, so good.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, now that I've said all this, Mark, you're not going to fuck it up. You are going to have adequate answers.
I really
answers.
Hope so.
Yeah?
Right, you're going to go mad, aren't you?
Go
oh,
on.
God. Here we go. We'll go with you first, then.
Probably the most obvious one. You'd both bet money on it. Natalie Portman in Leon as Matilda.
Excellent, excellent choice.
From 1994. We've had this, I think, of our best child performances.
Yeah.
Yep.
For me, it's not just a great child performance. It's a great performance for anyone. It genuinely moved me in a way I've never seen before. And I hadn't heard of her at this time. You know, the film itself is one of my favourite of all time. It probably makes my top 10. I love it that much. The emotion that she shows from someone that's had her whole family murdered.
Yeah.
She's then taken by an assassin, but she never seems that phased. She always seems that she could kick some ass if she needs to. And watching her become an assassin and being taken under the wing of Leon, I think that people sometimes say it's a bit too friendly, but I think the chemistry between the two of them is absolutely exquisite. Mm-hmm. The way she is for a 12-year-old, that's what you got to remember. She's 12 when she's in this film, which is absolutely insane. She's so realistic. The emotion she shows is just... I just can't take my eyes off the screen, and I can't believe it's the same person that we've seen in Star Wars, in Black Swan, and started so young and just nailed it, and just that's her first go.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
She's one of those that just seems, at the time, like an old head in a young body. She just seemed a lot older than she was.
Yeah.
Just naturally gifted, naturally talented.
I did not have anything together when I was 12. I couldn't even coordinate clothes properly when I was 12.
Still can't.
No, I know. My mum says I'm cool.
But yeah, I just always think of that one scene of her clutching that kind of potted plant of Leon's and the end as well. Spoiler alert coming up here. But when Leon actually takes his own life with the grenade, her face and the way she cries, it's just sincere. You believe it. You don't sit there thinking, oh, this looks a bit fake. And so many kid actors don't usually captivate me. I'm sure you've said as well, but you hate children.
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, and children actors are even worse.
Worst of the worst.
You can't avoid them when they're on the big screen.
Nope.
But I'll watch this film again and again, and I think... everyone has seen this film, but if you haven't, one thing I will say is go and see the extended cut. You can get it now. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's another 25 minutes. It's not like another five, and it's brutal. Absolute masterpiece of a film, and she deserves every award that ever came for that.
That ending, she goes straight back to being a 12-year-old kid. You mentioned about how she's really mature throughout the whole film, but in that moment, it's just a child, just absolutely hysterical.
Just yet more proof of how versatile and talented she is.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about her entrance as well. She has a black eye and a cigarette in her mouth. That's how you want to make an entrance in a film. That's the way to do it.
Superb choice.
So that one's okay then, guys?
We're fine with that.
Oh, so good.
Gemma, what have you got?
I've gone for Emma Stone in Superbad.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, playing the sweet and charismatic Jules, the object of Jonah Hill's affection. That's Jonah Hill.
Nice.
It was a film that seemed to update the legacy of the American high school film. You know, we had a bad taste in our mouths after American Pie, which completely destroyed it. But I think Emma Stone was largely responsible for why this film really worked, because... she played a character that didn't seem to be pigeonholed. You know, she wasn't the pretty one. She wasn't the dumb one. Mm-hmm. She was actually somebody with a really likable sense of humour, partly because Emma Stone herself is a likable person. The screen always lights up whenever she's on there, with Jonah Hill especially, because them two, again, have really great chemistry. And her charm is that viewers either want to hang out with her and be her friend or date her.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, she's just... a scene-stealing queen that is obviously made a really great name for herself now in her career, but a star was truly born when she was in Superbad. I think she's just wonderful.
It's so true. She's charm incarnate. She is a walking charm machine.
Yes.
And it sounds cliche, but she's one of those that just has the it factor.
Very much so.
From day one, from that first film, you knew she was going to be a superstar because she just had everything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And now, every single year, she's pretty much up for an Oscar or wins one.
That's not bad going, is it?
She's doing well.
She's doing bloody well. Mm-hmm. And considering that one scene was, you period on my leg, which always sticks out for me. I never thought that was going to go on to stuff like The Favourite or La La Land, to be fair. But what a film. What a great comedy.
Yeah. Very funny. And it is one that is on my list of future rewatches. Yes. We are going to do it and talk about it properly.
Oh, I can't wait for that day. I'm so excited.
It's a great cast as well. I love it.
Michael Cera.
Oh, I love him.
I love him so much.
It is. He's a great actor. He's never played anyone else but himself.
Yeah, he's the same guy in every film.
But a great film. I can't wait if that's going to be a rewatch soon.
Yes. Definitely, for sure.
Your topic then, Ben. What's your first one?
Well, I'm going to keep up this run of young girls. I'm going to go with Hayley Steinfeld as Mattie Ross in True Grit.
I had my mortgage bet on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have made my feelings very plain about Hayley Steinfeld. I adore her. I think she's magnificent. She was a revelation in this film as this strong-willed and worldly young girl, Mattie Ross. And it's such a mature performance, much like Natalie Portman's. And it's amazing for the fact that not only was it her debut, she was only 13 at the time of filming. Prior to this, she'd done a couple of film shorts, a couple of TV guest spots, but there was nothing to suggest that she had within her the kind of performance that she gives in True Grit. And not only does she give this fabulous performance, she does it on the same screen as Josh Brolin, Matt Damon and Jeff fucking Bridges.
Jesus Christ.
And not only does she hold her own, she out-acts them.
Yeah.
She is the best thing in the film. And you have to have a certain amount of verbal dexterity to be able to deal with Coen Brothers' dialogue, but she excels at it. She can verbally spar with Jeff Bridges like an actor with decades more experience than she has. Apparently 15,000 girls applied for this role.
What? Jesus Christ.
And she was picked. But, you know, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
You can see why she was picked, regardless of the numbers. One of the things that always surprises me, I talked on previous episodes about kind of vote rigging in the Oscars when people get dumped into the wrong categories because they're more likely to win. She was nominated for this film, Best Supporting Actress. And she's magnificent and is worthy of an Oscar nomination. But she was the lead. She actually has more screen time than Jeff Bridges, Josh Brolin, Matt Damon, any of those. She was undoubtedly the lead. So it pisses me off a little bit that they dumped her in supporting because it's her film.
Can I ask, were any of the male leads nominated for a main actor accolade?
If memory serves, I think Jeff Bridges was. Don't quote me on that, but okay. I think he was.
If that is true, then...
But it's not, I mean, I think you're assuming there's sexism at play, but it's not sexism. Okay. It's again, it's vote rigging. It's because they thought, we throw her in the supporting, she's more likely to win.
Right.
Whereas if she would have been in the lead, she was probably going to be up against Meryl Streep and those kinds.
So I can respect that.
I understand why they do this. Why they do this category rigging, but I think it's dim.
It is dim.
It's unfair. But she's a magnificent actress. She's such a natural, and she just has the kind of talent that cannot be taught.
Yeah, absolutely. It's organic.
It is organic.
She's a very organic lady.
And again, we saw her recently in Bumblebee.
Yeah,
she was very good.
And she was so delightful.
Yeah.
She's just really sweet. You warm to her straight away the moment she comes on screen. And I hope she, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I hope she goes on to more serious roles because Bumblebee's great and she's the teenage kind of chick who's with the robots and stuff. And it's cool, but I want her to do more serious roles like Emma Stone has since then because I think she's got some amazing performances in it that will get her the Oscar that she will truly deserve.
Mm-hmm. Am I right in thinking she was in Edge of 17?
She was the lead in Edge of 17.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's brilliant in that. It's a great
some good stuff, but I want to see some real, like, get it with someone like Quentin Tarantino, you know what I mean?
She went away and started working on her music career, which is a bad decision.
No.
And then she started doing crappy things like Pitch Perfect 2. Films that are just simply not worthy of her talents.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, you're right. She needs to get with good directors, good scripts, start winning some awards.
The announcement next week will be that Christopher Nolan has cast her as the lead in his next film.
We'll see.
There's a lot of love for the women today.
Yeah.
And rightfully
I'm not
going to
break it. I'm not going to break it one bit. So my next choice is Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie in Halloween.
Great choice.
My God, one of the best horrors of all time, but one of the best victims. But not the typical victim that runs up the stairs and screams and then ends up getting stabbed. We actually get her to see her fight back. She is a badass. Mm-hmm. And we've recently seen her again in the kind of reimagining of it in 2018, which I didn't think we'd ever see. It wrote off all the others. But nothing comes as close to the 1970s original Halloween. John Carpenter is by far one of the greatest directors. He picked her for a reason, and we've seen her go on to so much. But we see her as this very shy character who's very unsure at the start.
Yeah.
She's walking around with her friends. She has no idea this guy's on the loose. She's there just being a normal girl enjoying college life. Her whole life gets turned around. When you've got this madman with a knife attacking you, I believed every single time that she was that frightened, that she had that exact threat coming at her. It's not this over-the-top like you get in Scream, which is good and it works for those sort of movies, but it took me there and it made me realise what it would be like to have that absolute psycho coming after me. And the fear it still gives me now, 40 years later, is still like the first time I watched it, and that's because of her.
It's one of the reasons why she became a film scream queen. It's because she's so believable in those scenes when she's meant to be scared shitless.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the fight back because her confidence grows as the film goes on. She doesn't want to be a victim, like you said. You know, she wants to really stand her ground. She wants to protect the kids that she's supposed to be looking after. And there's no way she's going to let this man claim her life. She doesn't want any attachment for the trauma that she's eventually going to have later on in her future. She's taken back the night. And she does it.
Yes. Listen to us. We were bloody loving her.
I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
But she's
so much.
A great person. And listening to her in press junkets and seeing her on TV now, she's still got that love for that original, even though she's just done the new one, which was great.
It was.
I wanted to see more of her in the new one. I didn't feel like we had enough of her. She came on, showed why she's the badass. But this film, she owned from start to finish. And, you know, look at Jamie Lee Curtis. She's pretty. Should we make her one of our moms? You know, I could.
Aunt Jamie.
Aunt Jamie. That's Aunt's okay, yeah. Because her and Kurt Russell's a bit weird. We want to get that together. But yeah, she's. I absolutely love her. She's an absolute treasure.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you entirely on that.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going to go for a man.
Ooh.
A manny man. Sharlto Copley in District 9.
Oh, my Lord.
I've got it too.
Yes! Great choice.
Plays Vickers in Neil Blomkamp's sci-fi caper. And the story was a reinventive telling of apartheid in South Africa using aliens and humans, but all in all, it was Copley's portrayal of Vickers, because for a movie debut, again, he came across as a bit of an everyman. You met Vickers, you know him in the office, you know him as a mate, you know, your dad's mate. Everybody knows somebody that is just like this character. However, the development of said character throughout the whole film is absolutely remarkable. At the beginning, he's really mild-mannered, he's happy with his life, he's got a great wife, and you see that happiness, that excitement that Sharlto Copley brings to the role. And later on, when he's exposed to that biotechnology of the aliens, he becomes scared. He becomes almost a shell of what he is when you first meet him in the film. The development of somebody like that, whose first role it is astounding. It's absolutely mind-blowing.
It is. It's crazy because he's so good in the film that you'd absolutely believe that he was a professional actor who'd been on film for years. He'd only been in a couple of film shorts because he was friends with Neil Blomkamp, and Neil had put him in a couple of his shorts and then decided to put the weight on him for this full film, and he carries it. He carries that weight perfectly. He's absolutely amazing. He brings such realism to an otherwise crazy film, and I think that's helped by the fact that he improvises a lot of his lines, so the dialogue feels more naturalistic. And having an unknown in the role, it really helps the film, especially in the documentary scenes.
Yes.
It makes them seem more believable. It's easier to suspend your disbelief. If it would have been, let's say, a big star wattage power, you know, someone like Tom Cruise, it wouldn't have been easy to put yourself there. It would have taken you out of it too much. So having this guy who looks like an absolutely normal chap who we've never seen before, you believe that this is a documentary about some weird alien settlement in South Africa. It pulls you in, and he's a major part of that. I love the energy he brings to this film. He has such a unique energy in all of his films. Elysium is not a great film, but he's great in that. Yep. He's a really good villain. You know, the A-Team film is dog shit, let's be fair.
Never seen it.
Hardcore Henry.
But he's good in that. He's good in Hardcore Henry. Mm-hmm. And of course, how great was he in Free Fire?
Loved Absolutely him so fantastic. Much.
He just has an utterly unique energy and enthusiasm that I love to see him in everything. And this is where it all began.
And he's so individualistic too. Mm-hmm. There is nobody out there that is like Copley whatsoever.
Yeah.
And again, you'll see him in more and more. It's not like he's faded out. Yeah. He is one of the best things in Free Fire for me. I absolutely love him.
It's protection from infection.
I'm not going to do any accents today.
Nor should you. The the one thing I should say, the one black mark against him, is that he does play the villain in the US remake of Old Boy.
Oh, SpaghettiO. Yeah.
And he is fucking terrible in that. But that's, you know, the whole film is terrible. You can't hold that
against
him.
By the by, let's pretend that never happened.
Yes, let's.
Okay.
Yeah.
If ever you bring that as a rewatch, that's the day I leave the podcast.
Why is
the laptop will just shut and I'll be gone.
Whoa. Why is Ben looking really mysterious right now?
It is my rewatch today. I wouldn't do that to you, I promise.
Thank you.
Well, my last one is also a female. There's a lot of girl power today.
Yes!
And the whole reason for this is this performance gave me a stiffy
like
no other at the age of 12.
How far are we into the episode?
I don't think I've ever been as hard since.
This is too much information.
Cameron Diaz, The Mask.
Okay.
I'm with you, though. That red dress. red dress.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, has this table got three legs all of a sudden because it's wobbling?
I am a tripod right now, but genuinely...
I am a tripod. Hear me roar.
This person came from a career as a model. She had not done any acting, and she turns up. And I know we all talk about how attractive she is. And at the age of 12, to see a blonde girl like that in that red dress was like a real life... What's the girl called that's in Roger Rabbit?
Jessica Rabbit.
It was like a real Jessica Rabbit for me. I was like, oh my God. But she's actually fantastic as the love interest.
I'm sorry, let's just go back. How could you knew her surname was Rabbit because you said Roger Rabbit. So how could you not remember Jessica?
I don't know. It's the girl in the red dress that's animated who I shouldn't fancy because she's a cartoon.
She doesn't exist.
But as a love interest to Jim Carrey's character in this film, of The Mask, she's great as well. She puts in a great performance and she's believable. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not just some bimbo that's like in a Transformers film where you get these cast girls that look good and they can't act. Yeah. I think she's a great actress. And then obviously since then we've seen stuff like Gangs of New York where she's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We've seen her in great, great roles. Right now, I was actually thinking this the other day, I've not seen her in anything. I don't know if she's retired and just called it a day.
She very rarely works now. Yeah. I think her last film might have been Sex Tape.
I was going to say...
Well, that's probably why.
It makes sense.
I was going to say The Counselor.
The Counselor, she was... she's really only done two or three films in the last 5-6 years.
She probably went to The Counselor about her sex tape because it was that fucking bad. That film was awful.
One of the worst films I've ever seen.
Ever.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Counselor?
I have seen The Counselor.
Is it any good?
Where she's rubbing her quim on the car.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yes. But anyway, back to my 12-year-old mindset.
What? Are we going back?
Yes, we are. Ben will agree here, there's nothing like her entrance you've seen him ever.
Yes.
Ever.
Yeah.
As a lad, to see that...
That is an awooga moment, isn't it?
Hubba hubba.
Yeah, big time.
It's unbelievable.
Hummula, hummula.
And again, I'm just really glad that she had a great career and did more serious roles, like we talked about.
Being John Malkovich.
Oh, what a great film that is.
Vanilla Sky.
Mm. I love her in that. Bit mad, but, you know,
tiny
I
bit.
Like it.
She's a very good actress.
Very good.
Underrated. Mm.
And again, we've not seen her now, which is a shame.
It's a shame.
But if you are listening and you're bored,
hi, Cameron.
Come see my tripod.
God. It's not talking about photography either. Oh dear. Okay, so my last choice, I've gone for what I consider probably my favourite actress at the moment. It's Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave.
Ooh, good choice.
Very good.
An Oscar-winning performance, rightly so, as Patsy. And like I said, I'm very excited about her future. I loved her in Black Panther. I'm going to love her even more in Jordan Peele's new film, Us, which is coming very, very soon. But as Patsy, the aura of despair and tragedy that she has is just overwhelming to watch, and it makes her story all the more heartbreaking. I could talk about every single scene that she's in because she out-acts every single person on the screen. But the one that sticks out the most is the soap scene. And I think this was probably the reason why she got her best Oscar supporting actress role. She's caught with a bar of soap because she's working long hours in a cotton field. And she says herself, you know, she smells. She just wants to feel a little bit more human. And she's whipped for it. But she's whipped by Chiwetel Ejiofor's character. But he's quite soft at first.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender comes in and really lays it into her. But her facial expressions, her screams, her cries, and it completely rips your heart out. And even at the end when she's ultimately betrayed by Peter because he goes off and she's left in the field, she has no future. I think at one point she even asks him to kill her. But the passion and just the utter turmoil that I see in Lupita Nyong'o's eyes throughout this whole film, it connects with you. And that's what being a great actor or actress is. You need to connect with that person in order to believe their story. For this to be her debut role, I mean, it renders me absolutely speechless.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it's, if not the greatest debut that I've seen personally.
She is magnificent in the film. I don't particularly like that film. It didn't do a lot for me. I found it just to be misery porn.
It's very, 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 very dark.
But she is fucking brilliant in
She's
it, isn't
incredible.
She? And as you say, it was a debut performance. It came out of nowhere. I'd never heard of this girl.
Yeah.
And I think before this film, she'd filmed another film. I think it was one of those Liam Neeson is an angry dad and kills people type films.
Yeah. Oh, that one.
And she plays like an air hostess and she's only in two scenes. And that came out something like a month after this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was her next big film after this, even though it was filmed before.
But she has the whole world in her palm and I can't wait to see what her career is going to take. I really can't. I'm so excited for her.
She was great in Black Panther, one of the best things in that film.
And Us.
Us looks awesome.
That looks mental.
People are already saying that this performance that she's going to give in this film is going to be career defining. A lot of people are going to be talking about this in a very long time.
What a great CV she's got already.
She's amazing.
It's pretty flawless.
She's an absolute queen.
There we go.
Star Wars as well.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah.
Maz Kanata.
Not
Star
bad
Wars.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
So shall I finish it all off then?
Go
Sounds
on.
Good.
Oh, come on. It's got to be Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber in Die Hard.
Unbelievable.
German terrorist Hans Gruber, one of the great all-time movie villains. And this is the amazing thing about this. Alan Rickman was 42 when he made this film.
That's insane.
When he made his film debut. It's astounding to think that that was his first film. Before that, he'd appeared in a handful of British TV series, but his major love was the stage. You know, he trod the boards in West End of London and Broadway in New York, of course, as well. You know, in fact, he'd been nominated for a Tony Award on Broadway, which is why his name became known to the producers of Die Hard. It was Joel Silver, I think, who saw him in this performance and decided that he wanted to cast him as this villain. So he put feelers out and Rickman went for it, and the rest, as they say, is history. And I think it was a bit of an albatross around his neck because he was this thespian, Shakespearean actor in the theatre, and then forever he was known as this villain and was always repeatedly cast in villainous roles, but he was so fucking good at it.
I always think of Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Because it's almost meta, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he plays a character that had the albatross around his neck of being.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect casting. He's an absolutely brilliant, brilliant actor. I love how he always has this kind of constant sneer on his face and he's always looking down at the Americans. And I know that's the character because he's this German terrorist, but I also kind of think that's a little bit of him being a British thespian looking down on Bruce Willis, this lump. clearly thinking, I'm too good for this shit.
Yes.
But doing it anyway, because I'm sure it was a pretty good payday. And he was the first of seemingly a never-ending wave of Brits playing villains in American films. That just became the in thing mm-hmm. in the 80s, the 90s, and still to a yeah, point today.
Yeah. I still can't believe it's his debut. I kind of want to go on IMDb. I did see it because it came through loads on social media. And
it did.
It's mad. But it also gives you hope that if you're becoming an actor, at 42, you can still land a role that big and have a great career. Look, he went on to Dogma, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Be honest, he's great in Dogma.
He is great in Dogma, and it's a good film.
Yes. And did you hear that, everyone? Did you hear that?
I've said many times that Dogma's a good film.
But
it's his only good film, Kevin Smith.
It does give you hope, doesn't it? To start a career that late in the day and still have such a success. And it's a... It's a real sad moment when you actually remind yourself that he's no longer with us. I hate moments like that. I sometimes forget.
I miss him.
Oh, yeah. But
I miss him so much.
Probably one of my favourite villains in cinema history, I'd say.
Yes, I agree.
Good.
Yeah.
So not bad. Good on him.
Good for Alan Rickman.
Yes.
Rest in peace.
I'm loving that topic today. Is it already over?
A lot of fun.
That is it.
So, shall we hear what social media has to say?
Yeah.
Yeah? Good. Then here it is. We're going to Twitter first. Paul McGinley at SpeckyPaul77 said Ice Cube in Boys in the Hood.
Yes,
nice.
Very much.
Yeah. Emma Stone in Superbad.
Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours.
Yes, I nearly had that.
That's crazy.
Oh. Alan Wardle at Mr. A. Wardle said Jason Statham in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
He is good in that.
So good.
He's all right. Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween.
Brilliant.
And of course, Natalie Portman in Leon the Professional.
So good.
Lee Johnson at Lethal Juice said Hayley Steinfeld in True Grit.
Yup.
Edward Furlong in Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Yes, he is
so good.
Good.
Yeah. And I wanted to be him when I was that age.
Mm. Yeah, not now though. And and Thomas Turgoose in This Is England.
Yeah.
Oh. That's a great film.
Oh my God, gritty.
Very gritty.
Gritty. Simon White at The White Sigh said, Paddy Considine in A Room for Romeo Brass.
Never seen it.
No, I still haven't seen that
I've
one.
Never seen this, no, but I'd like to. Mm. Sharlto Copley, District 9, and Jason Schwartzman in Rushmore.
Oh,
old
nice.
Wes Anderson.
Great. Very old school. Yeah. Mm.
Then over to Facebook, we have Tom Round that said Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun.
Brilliant film.
Jacob Tremblay for Room.
Of course.
Oh, so
mesmerising.
And arguably the greatest choice out there, Tommy Wiseau in The Room.
Yeah. Are you surprised I didn't have that?
Yeah,
I was going to have Denny, I was going to have Mark, I was going to have Lisa.
Carlos Knight said Alan Rickman for Die Hard.
Yeah.
Nicole Kidman in BMX Bandits.
Yes.
Wow.
If you ever want to know
what her debut
Yeah, was, if you ever want to know what the 1980s are all about, that film defines
it's
it.
A great film.
And again, Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. And then finally, over to Instagram. Yes, Instagram. Susie B at Susarella_B said Alan Rickman for Die Hard. Francis McDormand for Blood Simple.
Jesus Christ.
Very good film.
What a career them like.
Very
together.
Good film. And finally, Kate Winslet in Heavenly Creatures. Yeah. Oh, good God, that's a great film.
Never seen it.
What?
I know.
Peter Jackson, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah.
I should do.
I think you'd really enjoy it.
Well, I'll not watch it.
I know you won't. He never does.
Hold on. Sorry. What was the film he guaranteed he was going to watch
this
week?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, did that happen?
Oh my God, it's great.
Fuck you. Fucking lying bastard.
Bullshit. But thank you very much, guys. We love reading them and keep them coming for the next one. So, whose topic is next?
It's mine.
Ah.
And following on from Gemma's topic not too long ago of best ever movie mums, let's switch it and do our top three movie dads.
Yay.
Whoa, Papa.
We've been to see Lego Movie 2, the second part. Wow.
Very good.
Well, what I'm going to do now is tell you what happens in the film.
Yeah.
But also, I do want to warn the people out there that right now, we're going to ruin the film with spoilers.
It's
we're going
nice
to talk about the big plots, stuff that happens.
The big plots.
Yeah.
The big ones, only the big.
And I don't want people moaning, because this is your warning now. Yeah. Can you even put the times in?
Can you imagine if they started moaning?
I know.
But at least you've warned them.
I'd be furious.
Good
there's
for
any
you.
8-year-olds listening who've not been to it, just fuck off.
It's been 5 years since everything was awesome and the citizens are facing a new threat. Lego Duplo invaders from outer space, wrecking everything faster than they can rebuild. It's now up to Emmett, Lucy, Batman and the rest of the gang to take on this and test their courage and creativity. How's that?
Yes, that's excellent reading from IMDb. Well
word thank for you, word. IMDb, yet again.
Congratulations.
So what we're going to do now is discuss if we liked it or if we didn't. So what I want to do is go straight to Ben. Did you love Lego Movie 2 or was it Lego Movie Poo?
Somewhere in between, quite yeah. frankly. It was perfectly fine. I don't feel it added anything new to the franchise. It felt a bit flat to me.
Yeah.
And I found my attention wandering quite often.
You can tell in the way you're talking right now. Gemma.
Everything isn't as awesome as what it was the first time around, but it's a film.
It is a film.
Well
had,
done.
It had a start. It had kind of a middle.
Yeah.
And sort of an end.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There we go.
Well done.
It definitely happened.
Yes.
That's for sure.
And it was a film.
Yeah. And we took a bit of time out of our day, and we went there, we watched it, and then we came back home.
You're waffling.
Wait a minute.
For me, this film didn't really work. The jokes fell apart. It didn't have everything that the first one had, and it was not needed. And that's a shame, because we loved the first one. We all bloody loved it. We loved the Lego Batman movie.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but I came away from that cinema today just thinking, I could have spent 2 hours of my life better.
Yeah.
Probably watching Oh Brother, We're Out There.
You're waffling now.
Could have done that.
So where should we start, Ben? Tell me why you didn't like it.
This wasn't great. No. Let's try and be positive.
Yes, like a sandwich.
I enjoyed some of the parodies. I like that the opening stretch of the film is a very clear Mad Max parody. I thought that was a good bit of fun. I like that there's a parody of Emmett travelling through the Stairgate, which was a parody of the Stargate in 2001 Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
The counter side to that argument is, I think we're kind of in an era at the minute of films just relying on people's nostalgia for other better films.
Agreed.
So this film does it. Just loads of parodies of older better films. Ready Player One, that's entirely what that film is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we had Wreck-It Ralph as well the other week.
Yeah.
Wreck-It Ralph 2, which was the same thing. It's like, I get it. I get why they do it, but it's a shortcut. It's a narrative shortcut. Like, okay, you might not actually be enjoying this film, but you enjoyed this older film, so we'll show you a little clip of that or a little joke on that, and then you'll be enjoying this one as well. Ha ha ha, we win.
It's like us on the rewatch.
Yeah, a bit, yeah. It's just a complete cheat for me.
Yeah.
And it's just happening too often in films.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Complete commercialism. Mm. The first film made a load of parents and a load of kids go out and buy Lego.
Parrots.
Lego set parents.
Oh, parents.
I'm sure you said parents.
Parents. Like, basically everybody bought loads of Lego bits and pieces and characters and build stations, and now they're doing the same thing with Duplo.
Yeah.
We're going to see a surge of money go straight into Duplo's pocket and...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I didn't feel anything.
No. The animation was good.
Yes,
right.
I thought that was very good.
Yeah. Very bright.
Batman stole every scene he was in for
always
me.
Does,
I love him. Thought he was great. I liked some of the new characters. I liked Rex Danger Vest. I thought he was really good. I liked his kind of interactions with Emmett. I thought he was cool. He reminded me a bit like Han Solo. He had that feel about him.
Well, the interesting thing about Rex Danger Vest, obviously he's played by Chris Pratt as well as Emmett. Mm-hmm. And they tried to make the character a combination of previous Chris Pratt characters.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of Star-Lord in him. There's a little bit of his character from Jurassic World.
Yeah.
But my favourite bit about Rex Danger Vest is the fact that Chris Pratt is doing it in a Kurt Russell voice.
Yeah,
he's doing a Kurt Russell impression with that famous drawl of his, and he's doing it really well because obviously they play together in
Guardians
2.
Yeah, I like when he said about, you know, he's the combination of a chiseled face underneath all the baby fat. I thought that was quite a nice little dig at Chris Pratt's personal life. But it's lovely, wasn't it?
Stuff I didn't like. Okay, so one of the most annoying characters is the Queen, whatever was it Wannabe?
Voiced by Tiffany Haddish.
My God, every scene she came on, I was just cringing. I hated it. I hated her voice. It annoyed me. Absolutely waste of time.
It's a shame because she's actually a really...
I have to be honest.
I like her as a comedian. I think she's really good. But I kind of feel like she was kind of just shoehorned in just to flesh out maybe the story, because there's not much to the story.
No,
it's
weak. And this is the only film that had two musical numbers, full realized musical numbers. You know when a film's in trouble when they're trying to extend an unnecessary portion like that.
And I didn't like them.
Was too many.
Yeah.
I did like some of the voices. I was surprised by some of the voices. The fact that we had in there Richard Ayoade as the Ice Cream Cone and Noel Fielding as Balthazar the Vampire.
Noel Fielding, that I was watching it thinking, whose fucking voice is that?
So clearly whoever did the casting for this is a big IT Crowd fan to get both of those guys in.
Definitely. Also Stephanie Beatriz as
General
Mayhem.
Yes, she was very good.
From Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Mm-hmm. I did like her. Mm-hmm. And I must admit, I did laugh at the Bruce Willis cameo.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was quite
brilliant.
But yeah.
Yeah. I like the fake ending. That was pretty good. I was ready to pack my bag really and struggling. Get up and go. I was like, oh, right, there we go.
We're really struggling here, aren't we?
And we don't normally do this, but no, there's just not much to it. There was...
Yeah, it's so thin, the
film. Very, very. It didn't really feel like a padded film.
I only laughed once. The one time I laughed throughout the entire film was when Rex Dangervest says, "I invented the phrase no regrets. I do regret not trademarking it." That's a good line.
Yeah.
That's a good line. That made me laugh, and there should have been more of that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the jokes fell for me, a lot. And yeah. That song that they keep doing about, this is the song that's going to get into, you're going to be, off. It was stuck in my head when I left the cinema. It's annoying.
Well, I get that, but that's the intention. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, that's them riffing on the fact that Everything Is Awesome was a horrible earworm of a song that got stuck in your head. So they've gone, fuck it, let's one-up ourselves and make it obviously annoying. I do get that. They're sort of parodying themselves.
Yeah. But then again, they're looking for the first film for inspiration to make more money on the second film. With that being said, are we going to see a third film?
Probably. To me, this second film is a bold-faced example of commercialism overtaking art. They've made this purely because they knew there was money to be made.
Yeah.
There is no reason for this film to exist, and it's absolutely fine. It's not a terrible film. It just did not need to exist other than to make more money off parents.
Yeah.
Or parrots.
I reckon.
Always with the parrots.
And that's kind of why I'm glad they haven't made Mac and Me 2. Because, you know, we're teased
exactly
by it.
Exactly the same thing.
But they don't want it. They don't want to cash in, dude.
Yeah. The thing is, though, Mark, when they do eventually do Mac and Me 2, it means we'll get Mac Pops.
That would be incredible.
like the Office Pops they released yesterday and the Jaws Pops we're finally getting.
Oh, they're Simpsons. Let's talk about Funko.
Let's talk about Funko Pops.
My God, those announcements were great. Yes.
Weren't they just?
I love the Simpsons ones. They got some, like, Beavis and Butthead toys, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter.
The Office ones, I was all over those. I want the one of Kevin with his chili pot.
That's incredible.
That's unreal.
And to have Jaws, it's like, it still doesn't seem real to me. I was like, are you sick? I'm going to have a Quint Funko Pop.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have to get Jim and Pam from The Office too together. You can't have them separately. They must be together at all times.
I'm gutted at the minute there's no Creed.
I'm gutted too.
Wave 2, man. That's when you're going to get Nard Dog.
Phyllis.
And the Simpsons one, I did like that they had Homer in his moo-moo, you know, when he got really fat. And his moo-moo in his fat guy hat.
So should we score Funko?
Yeah.
10 out of 10 for Funko.
Do you know what? Because we've got such a great episode ahead, I know this because I know the game show is great. I really can't wait for you to watch. Shall we just get this done and score it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Brilliant.
Okay.
So Ben, you went first. Give me an out of 10.
I don't know. 6?
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, then.
I don't know. Yeah, that's fine.
Any reason?
Nah.
Gemma?
6 seems very reasonable. Count me in for that too.
I can't be asked to do any maths today, so let's go 6 as well. So overall, skip to the end, give Lego Movie 2, the second part, 6 out of 10. It's competition time! You know that by now. All you compers that have just tuned in to try and win some prizes, this is your moment. You fast-forwarded our amazing review and great topic, really short review, and now it's time, you know the score, to win some amazing prizes. But more importantly, let's announce the winners as well from the last episode.
Good.
We did the rewatch of Back to the Future, so Last Exit came along and gave us a couple of very sexy Back to the Future-style t-shirts. Starting with a Hill Valley High School t-shirt. And the question we put out there was, who plays Marty McFly in Back to the Future? So, Ben?
Michael J. Fox.
It's true. And at James Gain, we'll be getting that t-shirt in the post. The second t-shirt we had was a Twin Pines Mall t-shirt. And the question was, Michael J. Fox plays which character in Back to the Future?
Marty McFly.
It's true. How did you know that?
I don't know. It just came to my head straight
and
away.
At Sir_Die, which is Sir Die Robert Lewis, we'll be getting that in the post. And again, please post your photos because there's nothing better than seeing you in these cool t-shirts. And Last Exit always retweet you and everyone loves it. So it's great. Also, Richard Sounds came along and gave us some Sennheiser headphones, some HD wireless headphones. Ooh. And the question we put out there was, what is your favourite movie soundtrack of all time? And Michael Phillips has come along and said, Spawn.
One of my favourites too.
So good. Unreal. That one stood out for me because it's got some great bands, some great metal.
Metallica.
You know what I mean?
Prodigy.
So hopefully you'll be listening to that in your brand new Sennheiser headphones. That's Sennheiser.
Oh.
That's so
we
good.
We could do with some Sennheisers. Yeah. That would be great.
Big time.
Even though we have just updated our headphones, everyone. If you
can never have too many.
So better.
These are pretty snazzy.
They're pretty good. They also gave us a soundbar to enhance your incredible cinema home viewing by JBL.
How much are they paying you?
Too much. And what we said was, we made it a bit different. What's your favourite movie because of the musical score?
Oh.
Bit different there. And Emma Wright on Instagram said, The Good, Bad and the Ugly.
Great choice.
Yes. So, you know what I mean? You've got to recognise those choices. Funko, we've just been talking about for half of our last review, came along and gave us, because we were masturbating over Tim Burton, some Beetlejuice Funkos and some Nightmare Before Christmas Funkos. And the question we put out there was, Michael Keaton plays which character in Beetlejuice?
I think it's Beetlejuice.
It's true. And at Leetlejuice is going to win them. See what we did there?
Excellent.
That's pretty good.
Synergy.
Very good. Also, we had a Batman Daubs figure, which is the car, which was really cool. That Studdy pulled out of nowhere. Really cool. And the question we put out there was, what year was Batman released?
1989.
There we go. That wasn't Prince. That was actually Gemma.
I know. It's hard to believe, right?
And on email, Lisa Roundtree will be getting that. Also, because our rewatch was Back to the Future, we had a set of two, which was Marty McFly and Doc in the Funkos, which looked really, really cool. Really simple question. Who directed Back to the Future?
Robert Zemeckis.
It's true. And at Kinsalia, we'll be getting those in the post. The final one we put out there was, and we have to recognise those people that spend a lot of time doing a 5-star iTunes rating, with some excellent Wayne's World Funko Pops, which are really bloody damn good. Someone gave us a 5-star rating and put, 5 stars all day long. This actual podcast, unlike any other, gets better as the episodes go on. And that's really sweet.
Yeah.
I don't always agree with that.
No.
But listen to our last review just a moment ago. But this is a great name. Trifle Pants NZ will be getting that in the post.
Okay.
Which is pretty damn good.
Well done, Trifle Pants.
Let's not stop giving stuff away, yeah? So Warner Brothers have come along with the Lego Movie 2. And they've given us this bundle, which this is massive, okay? This is probably the biggest bundle we've ever given away. Free t-shirt, some headphones, a hat, an activity pack, a baseball t-shirt, a suitcase.
Ooh.
What?
I know, a Lego Movie 2 suitcase.
Does it
carry your
around?
Lego in?
Yeah.
Is it made of bricks?
That would be good.
Yeah.
That would be really good. A backpack, some stationery, a microphone. How crazy is that?
Wow. Of
course. We could start using them. A keychain, a duffel bag, a ring stand, an umbrella, a bookmark, a sticker reel, and a phone stand.
A ring stand?
Yep, to put your rings on.
Oh, of course.
There
silly
you
me.
Go. Because, you know, you're always losing them.
I know, yeah.
I need a lens.
Where's my bloody stand?
And if you need one, you definitely want it with Lego on. So, Will Arnett voices which character in the movie? Really, really simple. Last Exit to Nowhere, I've got nothing to go with Lego Man, and they've got nothing to go with Filth. Lego Man? What the hell's Lego Man? Well, if it was a film, that's why they've got nothing. It doesn't exist. But they've got a couple of great new designs. And the first one they're going to give us is a Bill and Ted Tour t-shirt.
Oh, amazing.
It's
so good.
Let's keep it really simple. Who plays the part of Ted in the film? And this is really cool. Because they've got so many new ones at the moment. I've seen a Knight Rider one. They've got loads of new designs. They're going to let you pick your own.
Mm.
So what should we say? Something simple. I'm trying to think. Why don't you just tweet us what t-shirt you want? That's really, really simple.
Put a lot of thought into that.
Yeah. Ooh, let's give it some thought. Actually, I can't be arsed. Also, Funko have come along and they've actually said, look, we've got nothing for Filth. We've got nothing at all. And they've not got
surprised.
Lego. But they have got a brand new set of Zoolander Funko Pops.
Ooh.
Which I didn't know existed. So who plays Derek Zoolander in the film? They've also released a brand new set of Star Wars. So they've got editions of brand new Princess Leia and Han Solo. So let's say who directed Star Wars. And Sully said when he was looking for some prizes the other day, he came across one of these Daubs Riders of a DeLorean, which is really rare, like a one-off that they've had. They sold out ages ago and he's got one for us.
Yeah.
So, how many miles per hour does the DeLorean have to hit before it goes back to the future?
Ooh, a head scratcher.
Is it 66,
oh my God.
88, or 100? How's that?
I thought he was going to double up then.
Yeah.
He's like, yes. No, I can't count to
can't
them.
Do that,
can't
there
come
we go.
Past 100.
And I do like recognising these iTunes reviews. They're really nice to see. So what we'll do this time is we'll give a set of Lost Boys Funkos away.
Ooh.
Cool.
But we'll keep the Corey one.
Of course.
That's
of course.
Fair.
Duh.
The best way to enter our competitions is to go on skiptheend.co.uk, because on there, there's our links to our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, and our email. And as you heard with the winners we announced today, you can win it by all of those different ways of entering. So stay tuned in 2 weeks to find out if you've won from entering.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, this section of the show where we pick a name out of a pot of a director and we wax lyrical about our favourite film from that person. On the last episode, we picked out none other than the one, the only, and we bow down to this chap, Martin Scorsese.
Wow. Yeah. My lord.
This was quite a tough one, and I know we say this every single episode, but this really did a number on me. Mm-hmm. How about you guys?
It's been the hardest one yet, because there's so much to choose from.
Right?
It is and it isn't for me. He has so many great films, and I said last week I could pick any from about 10, which is true.
Yeah.
But then when I looked at his list, there was one that just stood out for me, head and shoulders above the rest.
Wow.
I can't wait to hear it. But I'm going to hold it on ice, and I'm going to throw it to Mark first.
Okay.
Come on, Scorsese me!
Raging Bull from 1980.
Ooh, good choice.
I grew up with this film. As you know, my dad loves boxing. We used to watch Rocky. And he sat me down at a very young age and let me watch this without my mum knowing. Huh. It's quite a violent film. It's got quite a lot of nasty scenes. But I loved it. It's all about the life of Jake LaMotta, not Jack, back in the day. And how he basically has a life of violence and temper that leads him to the top of the ring. But outside the ring, his life falls to shit. I think that's exactly what it says on the DVD cover. But this is Robert De Niro at his best. He won a Best Actor award for this at the Oscars, and it's completely deserved. It's black and white, and I actually did a bit of research this week. It's because back in the 1940s, when he was a boxer, everyone's memories would have been of the black and white days of the TV and the photos, so that's why he chose to do that. It wasn't because of, like, Clerks, where they ran out of money and had to do it in black and white.
It's like the same thing.
But these fight scenes were so unique and so intense. It felt like every moment I saw the punching, I was in the ring feeling it, and it's because it was filmed in the ring. We're so used to seeing these films where it's outside the ring, you're in the crowd, or you get that kind of ringside perspective, but you're in there, you're feeling it. And the way that it's actually directed for me is just absolute perfection. I love Rocky films, mm-hmm. but they're all the same. They're all cheesy and it's what you want. This is a serious film that has a good backstory with it. It's not all just about his life in the ring. It's about the outside bit. The domestic violence scenes are hard to stomach.
Yeah,
again, watching it this week, I couldn't believe... At times, it's literally unbearable to watch. It's hard. It's very tough. But it's an absolute masterpiece. And for me... As much as Ben said, like, you know, you had it down to three or four and then there was only one that stood out, there was three that stood out for me. And this just topped the other two, just. But my God, this is a great film.
It is a great film. And we talk these days a lot about how Christian Bale will change his physicality for a film. He'll lose a load of weight or he'll put on a load of weight. De Niro was really the pioneer of that, wasn't he? In this film, he looked so out of shape in the later parts of LaMotta's life and career.
Yeah, so unrecognisable too. You would never imagine De Niro getting into that kind of doughy existence.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's one of those films where you forget it's De Niro, which is credit to him. Because sometimes, like in Rocky and Bullwinkle, you know it's him.
Oh, you know it's him.
You know it's him. But this film is just an absolute masterpiece. And like, if you haven't seen it and you're listening now, go and do it, because Joe Pesci in it as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking incredible.
Yeah.
He doesn't get enough credit, by the way.
That's true.
Because he's always up against the big guns. Think of the films he's in. Everyone that he's up against is an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
He deserves to one day give the limelight.
He is the very definition of a supporting actor, isn't he? Especially in Scorsese films.
Yeah.
And again, he's another one who kind of retired a few years back. We've seen very little of him. But thankfully, we're going to see him again in a new Scorsese film, The Irishman.
Yeah.
With De Niro and Pacino.
And
hello.
Netflix.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Bring it all on.
That should be incredible. The ingredients are all there. I just worry because it's just so... It could just go wrong.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Have the faith, my friend. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Come on, Ben. What is it?
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. It has to be Goodfellas.
Nice.
It was the first Scorsese film I ever saw, and I instantly fell in love with his work. For me, that's the greatest opening line in a film. It just sucks you in. You know exactly what this film's going to be all about. You know exactly who Henry Hill is at that point. It also has arguably the greatest tracking shot in a film. It's that shot when the camera works its way through the Copacabana Club as Henry takes his girlfriend Karen on a date. It leads her through the kitchen and then out into the main lounge. And it's also a metaphor. It's him leading her into the gangster lifestyle from which she'll never be able to escape. The film, it's such a delicate balance of tone as well. It manages to veer from comedy into drama seamlessly, sometimes within the same scene. So we've just spoken about Joe Pesci. You know, think of the legendary funny like a clown scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that starts off quite funny.
Yeah.
You think, oh, look, he's having a laugh.
Yeah.
And then he turns murderous and you think, fuck me, this guy's a psychopath.
Yeah.
And that balance of tone is such a very difficult tightrope to walk. And Scorsese's a master of that, especially in this film. It's full of moments of explosive violence as well, which is one of Scorsese's calling cards.
Yeah,
he's known
I
for
would
that
say
kind
so.
Of stuff. So there's the scene like Henry pistol whipping his neighbor or Tommy DeVito murdering Billy Batts. Brilliant, indelible scenes that live with you long after the film finishes. And the cast, oi, come on now, the cast is ridiculous. So you've got Ray Liotta as Henry Hill, you've got Joe Pesci, as I mentioned, Robert De Niro, Samuel L. Jackson in a very early role as well.
Unbelievable.
There are also about a dozen actors in it who then went on to appear in The Sopranos, including Lorraine Bracco. Just a formidable cast. It, for me, is Scorsese's masterpiece. Has many, many amazing films, of which Raging Bull is one. Gemma, I'm sure you're about to bring another one, and there are many, many more. But for me, this stands head and shoulders above the rest. Nothing for me has ever touched the perfection. It's very difficult to call a film perfect, but I would say this is a perfect film. It's one of the greatest films that was ever made. And extraordinarily, the year it came out, it lost at the Oscars to Dances with Fucking Wolves.
And you're still here and you haven't flipped the table.
Yeah.
Dances
with Wolves takes the piss, more like. Yeah. Fucking shit show.
Yeah, that is fucking bad.
Every rewatch I do of Goodfellas, I remind myself how amazing that film is. It really is one of the greatest gangster films of all time.
Yeah. I can't believe we haven't actually... I mean, we don't need to now, Ben's given us all, but I can't believe we've never done it.
I know.
That's
mad.
It's
crazy.
We'll do it one day.
And thinking about this topic and rewatching this film the other day, I think it's put it back in my top five. When we first did our top five all time, it was in. Mm. And then I dropped it out, I think, for maybe Spirited Away.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking it's edging back in now. I don't know what will come out. Oh. Maybe we'll do that again on a future episode. Maybe
our fifth anniversary.
Our fifth anniversary in August, we'll do our top
five
of all time.
Stay
tuned for that. It's only six months.
I like that at the moment, we've actually not had any duplications today.
This doesn't happen. This never, ever happens, does it? So I'm going to go very different. My favourite Martin Scorsese film is Taxi Driver.
Ooh, absolute masterpiece. Mm-hmm.
And it really was such a difficult decision because there are so many great Scorsese films. But I think in terms of the film that lasted very, very long into my memory, this is the film that did it. Because the whole film feels like it's sectioned into so many different worlds. We have the world of Travis Bickle, the guy who cuts a very lonely character who's just going through some really bad shit in his head because he's recovering from PTSD from being in war. But he's also very mentally unstable. Mm-hmm. And having this job as driving around lonesome in a taxi, just observing the world of New York around him, that world is dark, it's disturbing, it's dingy, you know. And it gives him this violence that rages within him, and he knows that he has to do something about it. And then you cut to Sybil Shepherd's character, Betsy. She represents this sort of clean-cut, all-American righteous presence that Travis could have a future with. And if he went that direction, maybe his life may get sorted out. But unfortunately, he kind of blows it, no pun intended, by taking her to a porno as a first date. We've all been there, right?
Always.
Yeah, just too
Debbie
real.
Debbie Does Dallas, that was probably when I was 18. Brilliant.
Oh, so relatable.
How old are you? Because that film's from the 70s, I think.
Yeah. I'm 61. I've just been using this great moisturiser.
But we also have the tragic figure of Iris, who's played wonderfully by Jodie Foster as the child prostitute. And it's Travis's way of redeeming himself to try and save her from the filth of the streets of New York. It's such a lonely yet anarchic film, which has this anti-hero too. You shouldn't be cheering him on. You shouldn't be supporting him. But at the same time, you're like, you know what? Right on, Travis. I'm totally with you, brother. It's so magnificent how Scorsese manages to create this whole world that we're maybe not familiar with, being New York. You know, you think of New York, you think glamour, glitz, lights, amazing times. But this is a completely different side.
Yeah, good point.
This film, I think if you mention it to most people, they will automatically think of, are you talking to me?
That
scene.
Yeah.
But the scene I always think of when I think of this is, you know that one when Travis is walking through that house? It's towards the end of the film, I think. And it's when the camera is on a crane and it goes up above him and it looks down on him in a 2D. It looks like an old Grand Theft Auto type
thing. Nice. Yeah.
And it shows him walking into the room and follows him above. That. I love that crane shot. I think that's fucking magnificent.
Well, you've got to remember, back then, no one else was doing that shit.
No.
He's going, I'll do this, and everyone else has now copied him.
Mm-hmm.
Good on him.
But it left such an impression when I first watched it, and when I do go back and rewatch it, it's just so remarkable to think that a film like that existed in a time where that wasn't really touched upon in films, it wasn't really touched upon on TV. This was something that was happening in real life, and Scorsese had the balls to make a film like this and really make an impact.
Wow. That's how you sell it.
Yeah.
Done.
I don't know what to do now.
I think we should go to social media.
I've just literally sat here going, he's amazing. Yeah. And I want to watch them all.
We've told the world why we love him, so let's find out why our listeners do. Dave Old, at Dave Old Not Young, has said, Taxi Driver, totally original. What other film created a scene that is still quoted today, like the You Talking To Me scene? Lee Morgan on Facebook has said Mean Streets, raw, energetic, edgy and truly exhilarating, a still brilliant blueprint for what was yet to come. Greg Waterworth at Destro Vega has said the king of comedy. De Niro turns in a stellar performance as the delusional and inappropriate Rupert Pupkin.
I've never seen it.
Oh, mate, it's one of my favourites. It's so good.
Wow.
Funny and really fucking dark
I
as
can't
well.
Imagine him doing humour in back then as well. I know, obviously, we had Wolf of Wall Street and stuff now, which has it, but back then it was very serious.
But it's not an out-and-out comedy. It's not a slapstick, you know, meet the fuckers type
thing. He's not going to start milking
Scorsese,
a cat.
Scorsese, no. Meet the Fuckers 4.
It's a very, very dark comedy, but it's a very good one. Donna Ward Circum on Facebook has said, I think Goodfellas is the best film ever made from a sheer technical filmmaking point of view. Hell of a lot of people would agree with you, Donna.
Yeah.
Magnificent movie. Paul McGinley at SpeckyPaul77 agrees with you, Mark. Raging Bull. The cinematography and performances, especially De Niro, are spot on.
Beautifully said. Better than I said. So you've got to come and take my place on the podcast. These two won't moan.
He's right.
Yeah,
just make sure you can edit.
Come on in.
On Instagram, Jen_Alford has said, The Departed.
Yes.
So glad he didn't mess up the remake of one of my favourite Asian movies like other Hollywood directors. Spike Lee, I'm looking at you.
That was from Infernal Affairs.
It was Infernal Affairs, a great film as well. Mm.
And that was the one that was very close for me. Oh. Very close.
Yes, it was up there for me as well. Jake Snape at Jake the Snape said, After Hours, a criminally underrated comedy with terrific performances from Griffin Dunn and Rosanna Arquette. I must admit, I've never seen it.
Neither have I.
Must be one of his older ones, I think. Mm. Check that out. David Roper on Facebook has said Shutter Island. Ooh. Awesome gothic weirdness.
Good. It is
so
good.
It's an underrated film,
it
I think.
Is.
It,
very
didn't,
much
it didn't
so.
Get as strong notice as a lot of his films do, but I think it's a good film.
It is, and I love the twist.
Yeah.
DiCaprio's amazing in it. Jesus. Of course.
Everything.
Standard.
Duh.
Eric Jones at Deacon050C has said Goodfellas is a masterpiece, but I love the splashy vibe of Casino.
Oh!
Yeah.
That was my second choice.
I kind of think Casino does get forgotten a little bit because it has a very similar tone to Goodfellas and similar cast. So people think of it as kind of secondary to that, but it is a brilliant film.
Oh, Sharon effing Stone.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Rules.
And then finally, James Gain at James Gain has said, The Wolf of Wall Street, brilliantly acted and executed. You know he's a dick, but he's so charming, you don't care.
It's very long, that film. You've got to be in the right frame of mind, but it's so good.
It is very good. Yeah. Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Always.
Every week.
It's the biggest landslide in MMD history.
Wow!
Goodfellas got 4 times as many votes as the next best.
Jesus!
Which was The Departed.
Wow!
Shutter Island was surprisingly popular for a film that I've said was fairly underrated. And we didn't get a single vote for either Cape Fear or Gangs of New York.
Really?
I'm surprised by that.
I'm surprised
Gangs
by
of
that.
New York, I thought, would have got a mention.
I love Cape Fear.
Yeah. Two great films.
There's far too many good stuff to choose from.
Big time. So whose turn is it to pick out of the pot?
It's mine.
Ooh,
I don't think
you,
I can top this, I'll be honest.
A drum roll
would be nice. So, on the next episode of the Skip to the End podcast, we will be masturbating over John Hughes.
Oh!
Yes!
Time for our annual Oscar predictions. What we're going to do is we're going to give you our predictions in what we consider to be the top 9 categories at the Oscars. We're going to say what we think will win, and we're also going to say what we want to win.
Wow.
That's
Gemma,
nice.
You're usually quite shit at this.
I mean, that's one way of saying it. Other people might say, you know, she did very well for trying.
Ugh.
You don't get medals for trying in this game, my dear.
Yeah, that's true. Never mind. I'm
so
quite
shit. We'll see, though. This year might be your year, Gem.
Come on, I'm feeling it.
Sounds like a Liverpool fan, doesn't
it? Hey, they might do well this year. Let's not go on that tangent,
though.
I don't get it.
We're going to start with Best Animated Film. So here are your nominees. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, Mirai, and Ralph Breaks the Internet. Now, we, of course, reviewed Ralph Breaks the Internet, so we don't need to discuss that again. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse I saw and loved. Gemma, you saw it as well, didn't you?
Oh, my God, it's far and beyond one of the greatest animations I've ever seen.
Magnificent. Mark, have you seen it yet?
I haven't, but I'm going to buy it as soon as it comes out on Blu-ray.
Whatever!
No, I am. I'm definitely going to buy it. It looks. You guys absolutely jizzed all over it.
You did,
And I just can't wait to. I just missed it at the cinema.
Has anyone seen Incredibles 2?
Yes.
Thoughts?
Not great.
It's not as good as the first one.
The same
one.
Effect as the Lego.
Yeah.
Just all right, but yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. Isle of Dogs. Anyone seen that?
I love
really,
Isle of
really
Dogs.
Really, really loved it. Mm. Great film. Can't be bothered. You'd love it. Wes Anderson, hoity-toity animation and
fuck
dogs.
It. Bollocks. And, and Mirai. Has anyone seen Mirai?
Oh, yeah. How many times have I watched it?
You are constantly talking about it.
It's Mirai.
Mirai Mark over here.
That's it. No, never seen it. Never
will. Me neither.
Let's get some predictions going then. So let's talk about first what will win. Mark, what's going to win?
Spider-Man.
Gemma, what's going to win?
Spider-Man.
Ben, what's going to win? Spider-Man.
Yes.
What do we want to win, Mark?
Spider-Man, even though I haven't seen it.
Gemma.
Spider-Man, because I have.
Hold on, you've got to pick one you have seen. You can't pick one you haven't seen. What do you, based on the ones you've seen,
okay,
what do you want
that.
To win?
Isle of Dogs.
Okay, Gemma, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Yes, I absolutely want Spider-Man to win as well.
You're hilarious.
Absolute chump.
I still love you.
But I do want it to win, because Spider-Man would be great. Wouldn't it just be great?
Oh, it's so good.
Moving on to Best Original Screenplay. Your nominees, Green Book, The Favourite, First Reformed, Roma and Vice. Now, of course, we reviewed Green Book, so we don't need to discuss that one. You know our feelings on that one. The Favourite. Have we all seen The Favourite?
Yes. Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's my film of the year so far.
Yeah, wow. Me too. I absolutely loved it as well. I thought it was fantastic. Has anyone seen First Reformed?
No.
No, I haven't. I've heard good things.
Is this Ethan Hawke?
Yeah. Meant to be very good. Didn't get around to seeing it. Roma. Has anyone seen that one yet?
I haven't, and it's on Netflix, so I should, but I will watch it by the time the Oscars go out.
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Thoughts?
Jesus Christ, it's amazing.
Wow.
It really is above and beyond one of Cuarón's finest work ever.
I will watch it, same as Mark, before the Oscars, but I'm just never in the mood to watch a black and white Mexican language film.
You are! Come on, it's just which one?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, there's no web-slinging in this one, but I still love it.
And Vice. Have we all seen Vice?
Yes.
Thoughts?
Boring.
I know.
Mm. And it's a shame because the actors are great. I love Amy Adams and I absolutely love Christian Bale, but it just didn't do much for me.
There's no story.
There is no story.
It's just a chronological list of events happening. There's no beginning, middle or end.
It's like skits.
It's just skits.
Skits.
Doesn't
skits
hang together.
To the end.
There we go.
Doesn't hang together as a film at all.
No.
Okay, so Best Original Screenplay. What's going to win? What will win, Mark?
The Favourite.
Ooh, Gemma.
Roma.
I'm going with The Favourite also, Mark.
Good.
What do you want to win, Mark?
I do want The Favourite to win. I love it.
Gemma?
I want The Favourite to win.
I want The Favourite to win as
well.
Excellent stuff. Moving on to Best Adapted Screenplay. Your nominees, BlacKkKlansman, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Can You Ever Forgive Me?, If Beale Street Could Talk, and A Star Is Born. BlacKkKlansman and Ballad of Buster Scruggs, we reviewed both of those on the podcast, so you can go back and listen to that.
Good.
Have either of you seen Can You Ever Forgive Me?
No.
Not yet.
No, I haven't. Melissa McCarthy is meant to be great in it, as is Richard E. Grant, but still haven't seen it
I
yet.
Want to.
The amount of buzz Richard E. Grant is getting.
Yeah.
He's like Mr. Oscars 2019. I bloody love his little face right now.
He's a great dude, isn't he? Great dude. I haven't seen If Beale Street Could Talk, have either of you?
I'm going to see it this week.
Okay.
Nope, and no. I probably never will.
No, I don't think I will either. And then finally, A Star Is Born, which we've all seen. And we all rather enjoyed, didn't we?
I really enjoyed it.
Liked it a lot.
Film of the year for me last year.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So who do we think will win this category, Mark?
If Beale Street Could Talk.
Okay.
That was an
I'm thinking if Mark could talk.
Yes, because I've just got the feeling it's going to.
You got new legs, Lieutenant Dan.
If Ian Beale Street could talk.
There we go. BlacKkKlansman.
Yes, I too think BlacKkKlansman will win. Mark, what do you want to win?
A Star Is Born.
Ooh, Gem, what do you want?
BlacKkKlansman.
I want BlacKkKlansman as well.
Cool.
Fantastic film. Moving on to Best Supporting Actor.
Ooh.
The nominees, Mahershala Ali for Green Book, Adam Driver for BlacKkKlansman, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me?, and Sam Rockwell for Vice. We've covered all of those films.
We have.
Don't really need to go into that anymore.
Nah.
Mark, who will win?
Mahershala Ali.
Who?
Mahershala Ali.
Well done. Gemma, who will win?
Mahershala Ali.
Yes, I agree. Mark, who do you want to win?
It's between him and Adam Driver. I want, because of how much I love him at the moment, and we've only just done Green Book, so at the moment, Mahershala.
Okay, well done.
I want Sam Elliott to win.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah,
oh, nice.
I thought he's such an underrated actor, and I thought his performance in A Star Is Born really punched your gut.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed
him. He was good.
He was good. I just don't think he was in it enough.
I know.
It's more like a guest appearance, a cameo, rather than a supporting role. He is brilliant, though.
I would love to see him win it.
Yeah, I would too. Mm. But for me, I'm going to go with I want Ali to win, because he's so good.
Yeah.
Let's move on then to Best Supporting Actress. Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk, Amy Adams in Vice, Marina di Tavira in Roma, Emma Stone in The Favourite or Rachel Weisz in The Favourite. Again, we've covered all of those films. Yep. So, Mark, who do you think will win?
Such a tough one, this one. Regina King.
Yep. Gemma?
Rachel Weisz, The Favourite.
I think Regina King will win. I'm with Mark on this. Mark, who do you want to win?
Emma Stone.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Because she's not got enough attention. Everyone's talking about The Favourite, the director, and other people that we'll come to in a moment. Mm-hmm. But everyone's not mentioning Emma Stone. She's kind of a bit of in the distance.
Yeah.
I think I would like Rachel Weisz to win because I do think that her poise throughout the whole film of The Favourite is just something else. I'd really like it.
I agree with you, Gemma. I want Rachel Weisz to win it. I think she's the best thing in that film. Yeah. It's a magnificent film. Mm-hmm. Moving on then to Best Lead Actor. The nominees: Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, Christian Bale in Vice, Bradley Cooper, A Star is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, and Viggo Mortensen in Green Book. We've covered Vice, A Star is Born, in Green Book. At Eternity's Gate isn't out yet in the UK, comes out next month. So the last one there to talk about is Bohemian Rhapsody, which I have not seen and will never see as long as I fucking live. Have you guys seen it?
I have.
Shame.
It's actually very well done. The editing is unbelievable, the way that they do it.
Yeah.
But the film itself is not great.
No. Did it change your view of the film knowing that it was directed by an alleged nonce?
I just had to switch off and not think about that. Yeah. But for Pedo Bingo.
Yeah, pretty good.
There you go, Bryan Singer. Yeah.
Didn't Dexter Fletcher take over?
He did,
yeah.
And he did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So who do we think will win, Mark?
I think he will. I think old Rami will win.
Mm-hmm. Gemma?
Rami Malek is going to win.
It pains me to say it, but I think he will as well. And the thing is, I love Rami Malek. I think he's brilliant in Mr. Robot. It's a great show and he's fantastic. So I like the guy. I just don't want anything to do with Queen to win anything ever.
Fair enough.
But I think he will. I think recently in the other award shows that have come about recently, he's just started to pip Christian Bale to the victory. So
he got the BAFTA, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
He did. Play to him.
So I think he's going to get it. But who do we want to win, Mark?
Viggo.
Oh, nice.
Because he was just great, wasn't he?
He was fantastic. Gemma?
Bradley Cooper.
I want Bradley as well.
Absolutely.
Magnificent in his film.
His voice annoyed me. I know you both love it.
I like it.
I know, and that's cool.
Loved it.
Just grated
on
me.
That opening song in the film, kick ass.
Too low.
Apparently, when he performs at the Oscars with Lady Gaga, he's not going to do it in the character's voice. He's just going to sing it in his own voice, which I think he's daft. Do it properly.
Do it in the way
you
did it.
I'll text him after this
recording.
Text
him now. Yeah.
Oi, Bradders.
Yeah.
Sort it out.
Best Lead Actress. The nominees: Glenn Close in The Wife, Yalitza Aspirico in Roma, Olivia Colman in The Favourite, Lady Gaga, A Star is Born, and Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me. Now, we've discussed Roma, The Favourite, A Star is Born. None of us have seen Can You Ever Forgive Me, and I haven't seen The Wife of either of you.
Nope.
No, Glenn Close is getting a lot of good notices for film, though.
Getting buzz.
Getting a lot of buzz. Mark, who do you think will win?
I think she'll get it. Mm. I think she's probably a dead cert.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because for me, I really want Olivia Colman to win.
All right, mate, I was going to ask you that in a bit.
Spoiler!
Jumping the gun, Gemma.
Can't help
himself.
I'm trying
to get the episode down.
Just can't help
Jesus Christ.
I have faith. I think Colman's going to get it.
Do you?
Yep, I've got faith in it.
I don't have faith. I think she should. I mean, I'm going to do a mark. I think Olivia Colman should win.
Yeah. Fucking hypocrite.
But she's not going to. Well, you've ruined the game, so I might as well ruin it further. Yes, I agree that Glenn Close is going to win. So, Mark, you want Colman to win?
Yes.
Yes, Gemma?
Definitely Colman.
And I want Colman to win.
Sorry.
Now to our penultimate category, Best Director. Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Pavel Pavlikovsky for Cold War, Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favourite, and Adam McKay for Vice. We've covered all of these films except Cold War, which I know Mark hasn't seen. I certainly haven't seen. But Gemma, you have, haven't you?
It was my skip to the recommend last year.
Yeah.
I bloody love it. I think it's an absolute class film. Really, really great. And it just shows the whole thing about love and hate and music all together. And I really like it. But I know you guys are never going to watch it.
Shouldn't have to. Shouldn't have to, Gemma. Mark, who will win?
I'm just grateful I didn't have to read out any of those names. So I'm be honest. I think the director of Roma will win.
You can say that
you
one.
You can say that, come
Alfonso
Cuarón.
Don't help him.
Sorry. Him. I couldn't help. Whenever
him.
I just had to. He was so under pressure.
It's like when you see a kid struggling with 1 plus 3.
Yeah, like 4. Yeah.
Well done. So him.
I agree. Alfonso Cuarón.
Yes, I think Cuarón's going to win it as well. Who do we want to win, Mark?
Do you know what? Spike Lee.
I want Spike Lee to win it too. Yeah.
I do three. Yeah. I really think he deserves it.
It's a great film.
Wonderful.
He doesn't get enough recognition.
Right?
Absolutely. And then the final category, Best Picture. The nominees: Roma, Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favourite, Green Book, A Star is Born, and Vice.
A lot of colours, isn't there? Black, green. Have you noticed?
Not a lot.
It's the year of the
it's some. Okay. I don't know about a lot.
Because the favourite is a lovely lavender shade.
It's going to be the biggest year for colours in main titles of films.
Roma is maroon, of course.
Out there. Hashtag Skip Fam. Get on it. Do the research. Find out. Is Mark right?
Yeah, come on, Skip Fam.
Sausage Fam. Jesus. Right.
Don't. It's been this week.
Oh, is this some nerdy internet thing I don't know? Because I don't use social media.
Yes, you'll be grateful.
All right, good.
So many sausage GIFs. So many sausage pictures.
GIFs.
Anyway. Mark, what will win?
Roma. And it'll be the first time Netflix have won.
Oh, yeah, good point. Gemma.
Roma's going to win it.
Yes, I agree. I think Roma's got it locked. Mark, who do you want to win?
This is tough, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
Black Klansman.
Oh, good shout.
I love that.
Yeah, Gemma.
The Favourite.
I'm with you, Pooch. I want The Favourite to win it as well.
It's such a punk film as well. Mm-hmm. It's so different out there.
It's very, very cool. So there you go. That's our nominees for the 2019 Oscars. We will be back with you in 2 weeks' time to let you know who's won. Here's a hint. It won't be Gemma.
You know what's really good? Last year, me and Ben won because we agreed on everything. So at the end, we were like, oh, fucking hell, we've picked everything.
Oh, that's true.
This time we haven't.
We've got different ones, haven't
we? So it should be good.
Oh, someone's going to win this.
Stay tuned.
It's the rewatch and same rules apply. Mm. We're going to be talking about it. On the last episode, I revealed we were going to watch Filth, which is directed by John S. Baird and is adapted from an Irving Welsh book. Set in Edinburgh, we meet Bruce, a crooked cop battling bipolar disorder and demons born from drink and drug abuse. Following an enlisted murder case, he's determined to win a top promotion in order to win back his estranged wife and daughter. The only way to achieve his dream is to lie, manipulate, and play the people who stand in his way. However, with his own sanity slipping from his control, will he become the puppeteer or the puppet in his own world? The film stars the likes of James McAvoy, Jamie Bell, Eddie Marsden, and Jim Broadbent, to name but a few. And oh my lordy lord, I'm looking forward to talking about this film. So I want to throw it over to Ben first. Is this Filth or just disgusting?
Both, but in the best possible way. It is a pitch black film with a typically extraordinary performance from James McAvoy, who is fast becoming one of my favourite actors.
Yep.
He's one of my favourite performers out there. It's fucking brilliant. I don't want to say too much yet. We're going to get into it, but suffice to say, I loved it.
Mark.
This film had no boundaries. It's nothing sweet, nothing fluffy. It's fucking bonkers. It's crazy. It's insane. And I loved it.
Good.
Good. Yeah, it's disgusting and it's disturbing and it's eccentric and it is completely out there. But my lord, I have so much love for this film and I am super excited that you both feel the exact same way. And James McAvoy, I am ready to preach to the church of Bruce Robertson.
Let's talk about Bruce, man. He's such a relentlessly sexist, racist, homophobic, misanthropic, deviant piece of shit.
Depraved.
But McAvoy is such a magnetic performer that you can't help but enjoy him anyway.
Yep.
He's such a character, such a hateable character.
Yes.
But you can't hate him because McAvoy is such a fucking great actor that he imbues him with life beyond that. As much of an asshole as he is, you can see that there's more to him than all those negative qualities. You can see that he's punishing himself for something that's happened in his past, which we later find out, Gemma, as you alluded to, is his wife and his daughter leaving him. He's a dickhead, but it's born out of pain, not out of evil.
It's that anti-hero aspect of a character. And as a viewer, we always find a character to latch onto. We want somebody to root for. We want someone to succeed and do well and achieve the dreams that they set out to do. But he's so despicable. You know, he's obnoxious. He's selfish. He's essentially a junkie who relishes in other people's misery to distract himself from his own misery that he suffers from day to day. And from the first moment we even see him, he flips the kid a bird and lets go of his balloon. So you know this guy's an absolute shit.
Yeah.
He is a shit.
He's absolutely horrendous, but he's a man that's losing his mind to drugs. Mm-hmm. And it's mental illness and the grief he's carrying. And if you can get past all the scummy stuff he does, it's quite sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah, it's quite upsetting.
Especially in the second half of the film, where we get beyond the kind of laughing at him for all the crazy shit he does. Mm-hmm. When we start to understand why he's doing it, you kind of stop laughing at him or with him and just kind of start thinking, oh man, this guy's fucked.
Exactly.
Which alludes to the twist that we'll get to later on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's clearly very depressed. You mentioned there him being bipolar. Do they ever actually say that in the film? Is that diagnosed?
I don't think so. I kind of got that feeling from him, obviously, that to the trips of the Dr. Rossi and, you know, the way how that's all played with very hallucinogenics. Mm-hmm. And
I think he's clearly depressed from one form or another, and it's manifesting itself as this hatred towards humanity. Mm. And again, all I can do is just keep coming back to how great McAvoy is. And I'm probably going to say the same thing we said about Split, but I don't think there's anyone else who could play this role as well as he does.
No.
He can manifest certain things that other actors can't do as well as him.
Yeah,
he's fucking magnificent.
Allegedly, he did do this. To get into the physicality of Bruce, he would drink half a bottle of whiskey the night before, turn up the next day to work, so he would have that sort of battered and bruised kind of look to his face, all those blood vessels like emerging from his pores.
His face is all puffy and you can see how patchy it is, and his eyes are bloodshot and he looks like fucking 10 pounds of shit in a five-pound bag.
Fun fact, he can also vomit on cue.
Wow.
So that scene where you see him splurging out his guts, that is a real talent.
I think I'd have had a talent.
I don't think I can't do that.
Party trick.
Yeah.
Don't make a mess. But yeah, he's absolutely outstanding. And the thing is, like, I've just fell completely in love with him. Like Ben said at the start, how he's become one of your favourite actors. Mm. Mm-hmm. He's just, I've never seen this film, remember, before.
Yeah, of course.
So
for
me, I'm like, oh my God, he's actually topped his performance in Split for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we saw him in Glass completely blow it out of the water again. And I'm just thinking to myself, what can't he do?
Yeah.
He doesn't do enough. That's the problem. True. Like, you look at his IMDb, okay, he was in X-Men, but he's not done enough.
But I kind of think that's... It strikes me that he doesn't do shit. He doesn't just do any old film for a paycheck, Nicolas Cage. He does films...
Boy, that's unfair.
He does films that are worthy of him, so he doesn't make that many films, which is good. I think you will have a longer, better career if you do that. So it's a shame that we don't see him more, but it's good for his overall career that he's not just churning out wank.
And he's a good looking chap, so it's good that he doesn't go and do stuff like La La Land and all this love, because he doesn't need to.
That's true.
Well, that's it.
Let's talk about some of the specific scenes, though. When you finally start to see what's going on behind the dickhead act, that's when the real acting comes through. The look on his face when there's a widow who's her husband had a heart attack and he tried to save him by giving him CPR and it failed. The widow then brings her son into the police station to say to him, you know, you're a hero. And his facade starts to crack because, of course, he doesn't see himself as a hero. He knows he's an unrepentant piece of shit. So the fact that someone sees beyond that and sees him as a good person, and there's just sort of a twitch of his face momentarily, it looks like he's going to cry, and then he pulls himself back together. Fucking amazing acting.
Like the mask slips.
Yeah.
You actually get to see a real piece of what Bruce is all about, but then he realises just how depraved and how much of a disgusting individual he is. It's almost like he builds up this wall for himself straight away. But as soon as those barriers are broken down, you just see a shell of a human being.
I can't top what you guys are saying on this one, but it's incredible to see it drop, and it's his face, isn't it? Everything he does, his eyes, the way he makes his like cheek move, it's just unbelievable.
And there's the other scene as well that really grabs me is, it's when he's been doing prank calls to this woman, Bunty, hasn't he? And there's a scene where he's at his house and he's watching videos of his wife who's left him, and he breaks down and he's crying, and he decides to do one of these prank calls to Bunty whilst he's crying, so he's in tears and his face is getting bright red, and then he's putting on this dodgy Manchester accent to pretend to be Frank Sidebottom, and then he starts having a wank, and he's doing all these things simultaneously. He's acting like three people at once, and again, it's just classic fucking
and he
McAvoy.
Does it well.
Yeah,
I listen to his voice when he's on that phone too, Bunty, and you can't tell that he's in tears, and it's just the way how he manages to control one aspect of himself while the other half of him just completely lets loose. It's unreal. Who can say in the acting world that they can do something like that, and they've been probably 20, 30 years in the business?
It's a pompous thing, but some people in acting refer to it as your instrument, and he is in the greatest, or one of the people with the greatest control of his instrument as I've ever seen in acting.
I agree.
He was having his instrument and he was
pumping it.
Playing the five-finger trombone now, wasn't he?
But do you know what I think's weird? Like, obviously when you get the contract and you sign on to this film, you know when you read the script it's going to be raunchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the way that he's wanking and fucking and getting his dick sucked, it's these scenes that are going on. You must think to yourself, how embarrassing would that be in front of the crew to sit there throwing one out? And he does it so convincingly. It's vulgar. It is. Watching it, you're like, fucking hell.
It's filth.
It is
filth.
And you're the biggest out of filth I know, but it's grim, isn't it? But to do that in front of a studio, in front of all these people, and just, like, I would be embarrassed. I'd be like, oh my God, everyone's watching me. I can't come.
But then...
Whoa!
That's not. We're not talking about the film now, are we? No. Is this an intervention?
But fair play to him. I think you've got to have a lot of stamina. And
stamina?
Oh my God!
I don't think it's nothing to do with stamina.
But think of it this way. Would you expect anything more from an Irving Welsh book?
No.
Irving Welsh, man, he's one twisted motherfuckers. And he's so great at coming up with these lovable sociopaths. There's definitely a touch of Begbie from Trainspotting in Bruce Robertson.
Oh my God.
And speaking of Welsh, so I've read the book Filth. Mark, I don't think you have.
I don't read.
A long time
Gemma,
ago, yeah,
it.
I have.
So I mentioned this last week, but I think it was off air.
It was.
A lot of people didn't think this book would ever be made. They said it was unfilmable. And one of the reasons for that is they don't actually bother using it in the film. But in the book, he has a tapeworm within him, and his tapeworm tells him what to do. And the book does this really bizarre thing of showing the tapeworm chomping away at the letters of the book. And this is not good for audio. The people out there in listening land won't be able to see this. But I'm showing Mark this for his benefit more than anything else. So this is what that looks like, Mark. I'm just showing in the book now.
Jesus. That's incredible.
How weird is that? Have you ever seen anything like that in a book? Where
never.
It looks
amazing,
like there
isn't
are
it?
Parts of the text being chomped out.
In about a week and a half's time, we'll tweet this picture out
and
then people can see. But that's insane.
It's bizarre, isn't it? And it's a fantastic book. And the book is even more brazen and
really
filthy
twisted.
Than the film. It's a long old book, and it goes into, you know, his relationship with his mother and all this kind of stuff. It's a fucking great read.
There's a scene at the start of the film where they confront one of these guys who is suspected of killing this Japanese tourist that they're investigating.
Yeah.
And they talk about a particular chap called the Beast.
Yeah.
Now, am I right in thinking that the Beast is essentially his dad, who's his mother was unfortunately assaulted by?
I think he killed
was,
her, yeah.
Yeah, he was the result of her.
Yeah. So they hint at it in the film, but they don't actually go into it. Let's talk about that big twist that you alluded to, though, Gemma.
Yeah,
the fact that throughout the film there was this blonde witness to that crime that Gemma's just mentioned there, and then it turns out the blonde witness is Bruce, dressed in his wife's clothes, trying to keep her memory alive. What do you think to that, Mark? What do you think to that as a twist?
Well, obviously I didn't see that coming. Anyone that lies and says they did. And that's just fucking mental. Yeah. And again, you just look at him thinking, there's nothing he wouldn't do.
Uh-huh.
And it just blew my mind. And fair play to him, I was convinced. And you're just watching him thinking, you're insane. He plays a lot of insane roles, doesn't
he? Does,
he? But very, very well done.
I think something like that kind of reveal could have veered into comedic territory because, you know, it really sucks, but as a society, we're not, it really fucking sucks, actually. You know, we should be very open-minded about all this type of thing. But what I love about it is what it just really shows just how desperate he is to latch on to the memory of his wife. He still wants her around. And in order to have that connection with her, he becomes her. And I just think that is, it really breaks my heart in a way because despite the veneer of being this absolute asshole, he's such a lonely, lonely man.
Yeah. And it's a film keeps one-upping itself. It keeps challenging itself to hold its own beer.
Yeah.
Because just when you think it's got as bleak as it can possibly get, it gets even more fucking bleak.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the very ending of the film.
Whoa.
So Bruce has reached his lowest ebb and he's decided to hang himself. Mm-hmm. And he's there. He's got. He's positioned the chair underneath him. He's got his scarf, his football scarf. That
the lady, that Mary, the widower, knitted for him engagement.
Oh, yeah.
And then the widower turns up at his door, and the widower and her son are knocking on the door, and you're thinking, he's going to be okay. He's got a ray of hope in his life. He's going to take the noose off and get down.
But that chair hangs in the air.
The chair hangs in the air. And then he just turns to the camera, looks straight in the camera, breaks the fourth wall, same rules apply. Clack, neck breaks. Fucking hell, man. That's fucking bleak.
What the shit? Do you ever think that, is it Irving Welsh?
Yeah.
Do you not think he should be locked up?
He's a mental case. He's a mental case, but in the best possible way.
He is one of the most creative writers I think the UK has ever, ever produced. And it's so good to know that somebody with his mind and his outlook on things, that he exists. I'm so glad he did.
It's like, for me, it's like a modern day Clockwork Orange feel to it that scared me. Meets something like Fear and Loathing. It had that weird pace, and it was just a head fuck.
It's funny you should say Clockwork Orange, actually, because the scenes where he's kind of hallucinating his meetings with his therapist, they reminded me of Clockwork Orange. You know the therapist that he has, the guy who always says, yes, ma'am, yes.
Oh my God, yes.
He reminded me of that guy.
Yeah.
So that's exactly when I thought of Clockwork.
And also with Jim Broadbent playing Dr. Rossi, he kind of had this very cartoonish appearance to him.
Massive
he had
head.
Like, yeah, but it was, and it was abnormally high.
Yeah.
And I think that was all to do with like this hallucination that Bruce was having, that was he real? Was it actually something he was experiencing?
Yeah.
I loved the fact that they over-exaggerated the physicality of him.
Did anyone have any negatives? Was there anything you didn't particularly like?
No. Honestly, I loved it all. I thought it was all really well done. Like Gemma said, it could have gone comical and a bit like Mrs. Brown's Boys when he was dressed as a woman.
Gross.
We haven't given enough credit to Jim Broadbent.
Yeah, he's very good.
I thought he was fucking ace. So honestly, everything worked for me. Everyone was like, oh, it's never going to work. That's what I saw when I saw people's reviews and people saying, you can't take that book and put it on screen, so I can't comment.
Yeah.
But for you, that would be interesting because there must have been a lot missed.
Well, that's it. As I said earlier, they've exercised a lot from the book to make the film more streamlined, but I don't think anything feels missed.
No.
You know, a lot of the time you're watching a film coming from a book and you're like, oh, they've not done this bit, they've not done that bit, it's shit. This feels like its own unit of art. It doesn't matter. They feel separate enough and they work as standalone things.
I have a particular MVP from this film and it's Bunty.
Bunty is
Shirley
good.
Henderson. Yes. Yeah. Now, Shirley Henderson is most known for the role of Moaning Myrtle from the Harry Potter series, but it is so good to see a bust out of that mould when she's just completely the antithesis of who Moaning Myrtle is. So she swears, she's a drunk, you know, she's got, you see her have sex on screen, which is rather scandalous. But also what I love about her the most is her frail voice, this little girl kind of voice, like, that kind of voice. Also, if you love Shirley Henderson in this role, you should check out a TV movie she did a few years ago or a number of years ago called Wedding Bells. And it aired on Channel 4, like I think the early 2000s. And she's an absolute psychopath with that same kind of little girl voice.
She always has that little girl voice.
She's
That's
amazing.
Her kind of defining trait, I think.
But it's great when it's used in the complete opposite way of what you would imagine it to be.
I think just going back to what I said earlier, if anyone had any negatives, I have one, but it's only a minor thing. I thought the music was overbearing at times. So that scene when those little chav lads first capture Bruce when he's dressed as his wife and the one guy starts beating him up in that room, the music is really overpowering and loud. It's too much. It's basically this wailing, screeching music.
Yeah.
It's like you don't need to force the emotion of the scene into our faces via music. We've got eyes and ears. Mm. We can see the characters.
It was very full on.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's a minor point in what
That's
I think
not
is
not bad, though, is
great.
It? Just picking up the music.
It's
yeah.
Really not, you know.
You know what? Not bad for the director of Stan and Ollie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bit of a change, isn't
it? Right? Yeah.
Fair play.
I think I'm done with filth. How about you guys? Are you guys feeling filthy enough?
I'm plenty filthy
I'm
right
all
now.
Out.
All right, let's score it. Mark, we'll start with you.
God, it's a hard one to score because it's not, I don't know, I don't think I'll watch it again.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like an experience. So it's a very high 8, which is, I think, a good score for a good film.
Superb. Ben?
I echo Mark. Yeah, I think it's a very high 8. Magnificent film. It's not a film you could watch regularly, I don't think. It's kind of similar to Trainspotting in that sense. It's too dark, it's too bleak, even though it's great. I can watch it every few years. 8 out of 10.
I'll make this nice and easy. I think an 8 is definitely valid. It's a very uncomfortable watch, but a rather entertaining one. So, Filth gets a skip to the end score of 8 out of 10.
Brilliant.
Lovely stuff.
So is it your choice, Ben?
It is my choice. And I've got two. And we're going to flip a coin.
I'm not doing that much work.
This year sees the anniversary of two different Keanu Reeves movies. It is the 20-year anniversary of The Matrix.
Bloody hell.
Oh, my God.
I know. How old do you feel?
Very.
Too old.
This will make you feel older. It is also the 30-year anniversary of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, my God.
So we're going to rewatch one of these two films.
I only want Bill and Ted.
Well, we'll find out.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
The coin will decide. So I'm going to flip the coin. Head is Ted.
Okay.
Tails is Matrix.
Are you
ready?
Rhymes? Okay.
Please be Ted.
It's Head. It's Ted.
Yes!
Our next rewatch, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Come on!
It's that time for a game show. And the best part is, it's a brand new one.
Ooh. Brand new one.
Brand new game show. And this game show is designed completely on the basis of how well do we all know each other.
Ooh.
So we're not going to have an orgy. So that's a good start.
Plot twist.
That would have been a good way to find out how we were.
That's true.
But it's a bit different. So let's just go straight to the rules, okay? So what we're going to do is, you know, the alphabet has 26 letters.
I'm well familiar done, Mark, with that.
Pretty good, eh? What I thought would be a good idea is to see if we all knew our favourite films beginning with each letter.
Ooh.
Okay.
So we've done Skip Back in Time with the year,
but
this is the letter. So for example, letter A could be The Abyss, if I thought Ben's favourite film was The Abyss. So what do you think? You think that's quite a good game show so far?
Yeah.
Could be.
So we'll take it in turns to reveal and basically guess each other's favourite films, but we're all against each other. And remember on the last episode when I teased, I said there's no Games Master. It's because we're all playing. It's not like you two are head-to-head.
I see the link now.
Yeah. But we need to spread this out over 3 weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
So today we'll be doing the letters A to I, which is the first nine.
Mm-hmm.
Then it'll be the next nine, which I haven't worked out. And then it'll be the final eight letters.
Yeah.
So that seems quite fair.
It does.
If at the point where we then decide the film and you get it right, you will be awarded 1 point.
Easy
That's
enough.
It.
Yeah.
1 point.
Yep.
But how well do we know each other? Sometimes maybe we know the other person better than we know ourselves.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well,
he's getting really existential now.
Say, for example, I say my favourite film is The Abyss.
Yeah.
But when you two turn over your choices for me and it says Alien,
yeah,
if you both agree, that kind of counteracts my choice.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because you both obviously agree and I don't.
Yeah.
So at that point, you will get an extra point.
Oh, because we know you better than you know yourself.
Of course.
Get
exactly.
Point.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, this could be interesting.
It's not going to be the easiest one to keep score.
Yeah.
But this time round, I will take that kind of duty on myself. But next week, Gemma, you will.
Oh, yeah.
And then you will for the final.
Can't hardly wait.
Do you like how Gemma and I are pretending we don't know how this game works, even though it took us hours to prepare?
There was email conversations.
No, keep going. So what we'll do is obviously we'll start with the letter A.
Good start.
And then we'll take it in turns to go round, and then we'll move to B until we get to I.
Uh-huh.
Do bear in mind I'm trying to keep score as we go along. But this should be quite good fun.
Yeah.
So shall we start with the famous letter A?
Well, why don't we start with the name of the quiz?
Oh. Yeah. So, what do you think would be a good title for this quiz that you've only just found out about?
Oh, I don't know.
Something alphabet-y.
How about alphabets?
Oh, is there a betting element to the quiz?
Nope.
Oh, that's doesn't work then, does it?
But I was quite near with my original guess too.
I bet it will be a shit show. And I bet Ben will win.
I don't know. So, it's a guessing game. Yeah. This is my prediction before we go into it. I think Mark and I will do quite well at guessing the two of us.
Yeah.
Because he and I have known each other longer and we've been doing this podcast together, therefore talking about movies longer. Whereas Gemma, you're a bit of an outlier. We've not known you as long, we've not doing the podcast as long.
I'm a stranger.
And she can surprise us.
And Gemma used to listen to the podcast before she was on it, so I think you'll know us better than we'll know you. I think Gemma's going to win. That's my prediction.
Oh, okay. I don't think I will, but thank you.
But we're not going to have a winner after 1 week.
No, let's
keep the scores going.
Okay.
That makes it good. So there's not like, oh God, I'm 6-0 down, that's it. You know, next week it could all change when we go from I to
We've seen this happen in previous games.
Only about once, but it's good. Yeah.
Still, you know.
So what do you think? Do you think I should go first and ask what you think I thought for A?
Yeah.
Then Gemma, then Ben.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. So the letter A, which is alpha in the phonetic alphabet.
Oh,
I'm not going to do that for everyone because I don't know them all. What do you both think I had for the letter A? So Gemma.
I think you had almost famous.
Okay. And Ben?
I also think you've got almost famous.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gemma.
So, all right, what do we think we've got for Gemma? I've gone a bit arty farty. I think you've got Amelie. Oh.
I've also got Amelie.
So finally, what do you guys think I've got for A?
This is a tough one. Yeah. I'm going with Anchorman.
Ooh, Gemma.
I too am going for Anchorman.
Let's reveal him.
Okay.
So, I have got almost famous.
So, we're both right.
Gemma's gone
for Anchorman.
Yes! Oh my God.
So I had Anchorman. Gemma's got Anchorman. Mark's got almost famous. So
points wise, this is not going to be easy.
Yeah.
Ben, you got a point,
I got
for,
a point for getting
almost
you, right?
famous.
Yeah.
Gemma got almost famous.
Yeah.
I got Anchorman.
You got Anchorman for me.
Gemma got a point for Anchorman. And Ben, what did you get for Gemma?
Amelie.
I put Amelie. I didn't get a point for Gemma.
But
so I've only got 1 point.
Because me and you both put Amelie.
Oh yeah?
We get a point.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Gemma.
This is some serious bullshit.
Yeah. But you know what the worst part is?
Yeah.
We're all equal on 2 points.
Yay,
that's fine. That's
we're
fine.
All winners, baby. We're all winners, baby.
Great start.
This is good.
So now we move to B, which is Bravo. See? So you can tell I've been on the phones.
I can't wait for the rest of them.
What do you guys think I've got for letter B? So, Gemma.
For B?
Yes.
I think you've got Back to the Future.
Okay. And Ben?
Samesies. Back to the Future.
Samesies.
Okay. So, Gemma. For you, I've gone with Boogie Nights.
I too have gone Boogie Nights.
Okay.
What have you got for me for B?
Surprisingly... Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Blade Runner.
Flip them over. Mark's got Back to the Future.
Yep.
I've got Boogie
Gemma's
Nights.
Gemma's got Boogie Nights and I've got Blade Runner.
So we've points all round.
We've all got a point.
Look how well we know
Brilliant.
Each other.
That's a good start. I love that.
Synchronisation.
This is all going well. The scoring's going well. I'm liking it.
And it's level pegging 3-3 at the minute.
I'll be honest, at that point, if we hadn't have got Blade Runner for Ben, that would be ridiculous.
We would have been gone outside and been shot.
This is when I think it's going to get interesting.
I think so too.
This is tough. Okay, so the letter C, Charlie, for those people.
Fucking hell.
What have you both got for me?
Right. I have Chasing Amy.
Nice.
I too have gone with Chasing Amy.
Brilliant. Okay, so for Gemma, I've got Clockwork Orange.
Oh, I've gone Carrie.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So we're going to have a bit of change here.
Okay.
What have you got for me?
This is one that took me the longest. Copland.
Ooh, Gemma.
Oh, my God. I found this an incredibly difficult letter, but I've gone for Casino Royale.
Oh, flip them over. I've got Copland.
Yes.
Gemma's got Clockwork Orange.
Yep.
And Mark has got Chasing Amy.
Oh, my God.
Brilliant. So Gemma and I both get a point for Chasing Amy.
Yep.
Mark gets a point for Copland.
Yep.
But...
And neither of us get a point for Clockwork Orange. What did you go for?
I got Clockwork
Orange. Oh, you did? Oh, Mark gets a point. Oh, shit.
Brilliant.
I said Carrie.
I love that you thought he had Casino Royale.
Spoiler. I don't know where you got this from, that I love that film.
I don't know.
It's a perfectly cromulent film, but I don't care about it that much.
Cromulent.
Right.
It also
Simpsons.
Begins with C. Yes.
Nice. D for Delta. This
now,
is a tough one.
We pre-agreed on this. Oh, obviously we didn't, because we didn't know this game was going to happen. Let's assume we had a telepathic conversation. If a film begins with the, it's not a T.
Yeah.
It's the next word.
I know.
So for Mark, for D, I've got The Dark Knight.
Okay.
I've got Die Hard.
Ooh.
A little background information. I had to text Ben this week to ask a few times what Star Wars would be. So for you, Gemma.
Yes.
I've got Die Hard.
Okay.
I've got Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, okay.
This is tough,
okay. Uh-huh. I've got Donnie Darko.
Oh, Gemma.
I also have Donnie Darko.
You fuckers.
Okay.
I've got Die Hard, but because you both did Donnie Darko, you get the points, don't you?
Yes.
You pieces of shit.
And I've got The Dark Knight.
I have Donnie Darko.
Oh, you got the point for...
So you both get a point for Donnie Darko.
Yep.
I get a point for saying The Dark Knight.
Well done.
I don't get anything for Doctor Strangelove.
No. And you get a point for... No, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
What did you have for Gemma?
I had Die Hard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, well.
Come on. All around me are familiar faces.
So
I prefer that.
We're nearly just at the halfway point. Do you want a quick scores?
Yeah, please.
Always.
At the moment, Gemma's on 5, Ben's on 5, and I'm in the lead with 6.
What?
Can we just end it now?
Freeze this moment.
This is the one that I had the most difficulty over.
I completely agree.
I don't mind
with you.
A bit in this. So the letter E for I don't know what E is.
I've gone
Echo.
For you it is.
Yes.
Well,
for you, Mark, I've gone for E.T.
Okay.
I've gone Evil Dead.
Ooh, interesting.
Oh, nice. Uh-huh. So for Gemma, I've got Exorcist.
Ooh, I went Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh,
nice.
Okay. What have you got for me?
This was a tricky one.
Eastern Promises.
Ooh, what have you gone for, Gemma?
I went for Easy A.
Oh, it is Eastern Promises, Mark.
Brilliant.
Well done.
I've got Eternal Sunshine.
Oh,
yes.
So Mark gets a point for Eastern Promises.
Yep.
Gemma gets a point for Eternal Sunshine.
Yep.
What have you got, Mark? What was yours?
Ex Machina.
Oh,
shit. Well, you prefer that to E.T.?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
I do, because E.T. made me shit my pants. Remember?
I'm really shocked. I did not see that coming.
What was yours? Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine.
Why did I not pick that?
Yeah, that's what
I don't know.
For.
I don't know why. I have no idea.
Now we're going to the letter F for Foxtrot.
Thank God, I thought you were going to say something else.
Or Flange.
Wasn't expecting that.
This is a tough one.
This is a tough one.
So what have you guys got for me for the letter F?
Okay.
I've gone with Fight Club.
Oh.
I've gone for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Ooh. Okay. okay. So for Gemma...
You gave it a 10 on the rewatch.
I've gone for Fargo.
I too have gone Fargo for Gemma.
Okay.
And for Ben, this is tough. I've gone Falling Down.
Oh.
I nearly did, but then I switched it to Fargo.
Oh.
You're both wrong. I had Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh,
no.
Wait. Are you ready?
So I went Fargo for Gemma, so I get a point for Gemma.
Brilliant. I went Fargo.
I had Fight Club for Mark. What have you got, Mark?
Ferris Bueller.
Oh,
scribbled that out on my first go.
Ferris Bueller.
Jeez Louise.
Do I not get a point? No.
No.
Damn it.
You get nothing. You get zero.
Nada.
You lose.
What was
your
choice?
Mine was Fargo.
Yeah, and
he got a point.
Fargo.
He got a point.
Oh, did you? Oh, sorry.
Ripped me out of a point.
Sorry, Levy.
Jesus Christ.
I know, it's so fun.
I'll tell you what, this is going well so far. Now we're on the letter G.
Are we?
Yes, yeah. We are. You're forgetting the alphabet. What's G in the phonetic alphabet?
Golf.
Golf, yeah. Love a bit of golf. Right then.
You're always banging on about it.
Bloody golf. Right then. This is tough.
Okay.
So what did you guys think I've got for the letter G?
Easy peasy.
See, I don't think it was easy. There's about 10 films from the 80s that he loves to begin with G. Yeah. So
God damn, you know me well.
Okay, I've gone Gremlins.
I too have also gone Gremlins.
Bastards. Okay, good. That's all right. So Gemma,
yeah.
This is tough.
Mm. I went for Grease.
I've gone for the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Galaxy.
And for me, what have you got?
The easiest one of all time. Mm-hmm. Goodfellas. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I went the Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Oh, I tell you what, it was between those two.
No!
But I went with Goodfellas.
Oh,
so,
yes.
So Mark gets the point.
I went for Gone Girl.
Oh, I don't get the point for Grease then. Mark, did you have Gremlins?
I did.
Ah, yes, I get a point for that.
Come on.
And Gemma gets a point.
Great.
Amazing. Kick-ass.
Got two more left. Do you want another scores?
Yeah,
always.
Go on.
At the moment, Gemma's on 8. Ben, you're only 1 point behind on 7. Ooh. And I'm leading with 9. But remember, this is a long game.
Still got 2 weeks to play
but
after this.
But this is a monumental occasion that Mark is in the lead. Well done.
Now we're going for the letter H for hotel. Mm-hmm. Now this is a tough one. So what did you both think I've got for that?
Home Alone.
Oh.
Halloween.
Oh, okay. So for Gemma, yeah. I've also gone for Halloween.
Okay.
I've gone for Halloween for Gemma as well.
All right.
Ben, this has been the hardest one.
This was hard.
Yeah.
Go on, what have you gone for?
I went for High Rise.
Oh, shit. I went for Happy Gilmore.
It is Happy Gilmore.
Yes!
Mark gets another point.
Yes!
Oh, Mark went for Halloween, so I don't get a point for Home Alone. Gemma, what did you have?
I went Halloween too. Yes!
So I get a point for Halloween for Gemma.
Yep.
Man alive!
And what did Gemma go for?
I went for...
High Rise and...
I went for High Rise and Halloween.
Oh, so you get a point.
Come on!
Good work! High Rise, why did I not... Not that he's gone for that, but fucking hell.
No, I got it right.
I know, but...
Right still.
Right then, the final one for this week.
Oh, God.
The letter I for indigo.
Oh, uh-huh. Man.
This is what it's all about.
This is it. This is the real quiz.
What did you guys think I went for the letter I?
I've gone Inglourious Basterds.
Okay, interesting. Gemma.
I've gone for your boy Nolan. I went Inception.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. So it's for Gemma, I went Inglourious Basterds.
I went with If.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
And for Ben, fucking eyes. I went Inception.
Okay.
I flipped the switch. I went Inglourious Basterds.
Gemma's right. I had Inglourious Basterds.
Come on.
Gemma gets a point for me there. Gemma, what did you have?
I went It.
It.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah.
The F in If is a typo. I meant
just,
It.
Just ignore the three dots. That's a typo.
Yeah. Are you ready?
What did you have?
Yeah, go on.
Inglourious.
Yes, I get the point.
Good work.
Whoa, so, this is
really
exciting.
Really, Ben? Inglourious over Inception?
No,
yeah.
I can...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Time, yeah.
Hell.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It was literally... At one point, when I did my answers, it was the other way around, and yeah. I wish to goodness I kept it, but I didn't, so no, never mind.
So, do you want to know the scores
go
after
on.
Round one of alphabets?
Yeah.
Ben, you're at the moment on 9,
ooh.
But Gemma's only 1 point ahead on 10.
Oh, my God.
And currently in the lead is myself with 11.
Oh.
So there's all to play for, and we'll come back in 2 weeks and play it all again.
Oh, my Lord.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. Lots of good shit out there in the world again this week. It's never ending.
So much.
Too much.
Too much content.
That's it. It's too much. Where do you get the time for Netflix, Amazon, music, Spotify, going to gigs, reading books? Fucking mad.
I'm
eating,
trying.
Breathing, sleeping.
Yeah. All of the above. I'm trying to find time myself.
It's mad.
Can't.
But I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what you've got. Gemma, Pooch, what have you got this week?
I've got a podcast.
Ooh.
I have a comedy podcast.
Ooh.
Called Off Menu with Ed Gamble and James Acaster.
Oh, nice.
I was reading about this the other day, weirdly enough.
It's brilliant. And I want to give a shout out to my good friend Tucker, who recommended this little beauty of a podcast. You can listen to this on all good streaming services such as Spotify, iTunes and Castbox, to name but a handful. And hosts Ed Gamble and James Acaster invite a guest onto the show to order their dream meal, which consists of a starter, a main course, a side dish, a dessert and a drink in their imaginary restaurant where James Acaster is the genie waiter. Listen to it, you'll get it, and you'll understand why. And it's only been going on since December. So it's a bi-weekly episode. And previous guests have included the likes of Aisling Bea, Joel Dommett, Neesh Kumar, Krishnan Gurumurthy, to name but a few. But the partnership of both Gamble and Acaster is what really makes it. And they make it work so effortlessly. Gamble's kind of the leader of it. He kind of is the one that takes the reins and steers the questions to the guests. Whereas Acaster just interjects with all these crazy, wacky, kind of nonsensical things. But the two of them together is just comedy gold. And fun fact, my sister used to work in kitchens with James Acaster.
Ooh,
many,
wow.
Many moons ago.
In Kettering.
In Kettering, good old Ketters. But despite being only 11 episodes in, it's genuinely funny. It's really worth looking at and subscribing. And yeah, and there's also a YouTube series that they do called Just Puddings, which is also worth a look. So that is my recommendation for this episode.
See, my initial reaction to that, people talking about what their favourite meal would be or, you know, their ideal meal, I'm thinking that's quite a limited premise. How are they going to make that work? But then again, this shit's limited and we've done it for 5 fucking years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's really worth it. One of my favourite episodes is Aisling Bea. She's an absolute delight. She's a really funny comedian and just some of the answers she gives is just batshit crazy. Love it.
It'd probably make me hungry as well.
Every single time.
I'd sit there and be like, just getting on Just Eat while listening, realising, and be like, fucking hell, Acast, you just cost me £6 on a kebab.
I've finished an episode, it's like, where's the nearest burger joint?
Yeah.
Did you ever see the film? What was that film with Morgan Spurlock about McDonald's?
Oh, Supersize Me.
Yeah.
And immediately I watched that, I went to McDonald's, which was the opposite effect that it was supposed to have. But I'm just watching Big Macs for 2 hours. I'm like, I want a fucking Big Mac.
Have any of you had the Grande new one with bacon?
Oh, not yet. Well, Mark, I texted you a picture of me.
I'm trying to get a conversation here.
Religion.
Is it the same? Because I always think you should leave bacon off because that doesn't make it a Big Mac for me.
I don't know. Have you ever tried?
A Big Mac shouldn't have bacon on.
Well, then don't have the one with bacon on.
I know, but it just annoys me.
But have you ever tried?
Because a Big Mac is a Big Mac. So it's not fucking about.
So if they called it something else, if it was the same thing but with a different name.
Big Mac with bacon.
That is what they call it.
No, they don't. They call it a Big Mac Grande. So I want to get it.
But I think you can have a Big Mac Grande without bacon.
I hope so.
You can. It's just a Big Mac.
That's McDonald's.
Yes. But I love a fucking Big Mac.
Should we get Mackey's after this? Yeah, I'm hungry.
Let's do it.
I'm well up for a McDonald's. No, I genuinely am. I love a Big Mac.
Yeah, me
then
too.
You will be starving once you've heard one of these episodes. And you'll be hankering.
Nuggets as well. Oh, like, genuinely. Oh. Ben, I'm going to call you out on this episode, but I know you can sit and eat 40, and that blows my mind.
Easy.
I try and do a 20 challenge, and I'm like, oh, I can get one more in. He's 40 and a Big Mac.
I struggle with 6 because I have a tiny stomach.
It's mad.
I have 40 with a large strawberry milkshake.
Where does it go, though? You're thin as a beanpole.
I used to be.
Where do you pack it? I can't see any drawers
all
in there.
Me, a little paunch.
Strawberry milkshake. By the way, their milkshakes are unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm a classic. I love a vanilla
and
milkshake.
And I do love McFlurries.
Oh, my God. Get out of my head.
Yeah.
I was joking before, but I'm deadly serious now. Should we get Mackey's after
this?
Let's do it, I'm well up for it. I'm well hungry.
Sorry for making you both hungry.
Jeez, let's get off this. Mark, what have you got?
I've got a stand-up show. It only hit Amazon on Friday. Henry Rollins, Keep Talking, Pal.
Ooh.
This is a brand new special that's recorded in Portland. This guy's a fucking pro at everything he does. He's the best front man from his band in Black Flag. Hopefully you both love the guy.
Of course.
He's one of the best writers. He's one of the best storytellers. He's so fucking animated on screen. Even the fact that he holds a mic like he's at a gig. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a mic stand. He's not like Ricky Gervais who stands behind a table or anything. He holds it like he's about to do a gig. And he has stories that last forever. This guy's done over 3,000 shows, which is mind-blowing.
What?
Absolutely insane. And he still makes me drawn to want to watch everything he does. But this is a 1 hour special that's gone straight to Amazon. He's telling stories about meeting David Bowie. Can you imagine them two together?
God, yes.
How women should be more important. He's got a lot of thoughts on that.
Yes.
But he's just great. And he's got so many good stories about when he toured and the kind of hilarious stories about when the bands first started and the early gigs that were empty, even to the most recent gigs that were absolutely full on. But this stage in Portland looks tiny. It looks like somewhere like a pub.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the right crowd in. They're not too rowdy being dicks. And he just says at the start, the reason the cameras are here tonight, I've chose this venue, it's Portland, it's where I want to be. He delivers just an hour. And I think sometimes some stand-up shows, whether you're like 2.5 hours, it's too long. I'm just lost interest. I didn't stop. I didn't take my phone out. I didn't go for a piss. For 1 hour.
Well done.
For 1 hour, he had me in his hand, and he's fucking great.
He needed a mop afterwards.
Yeah, absolute legend.
To be fair, 1 hour is like 5 times as long as your attention
exactly.
can usually hold anything. So that is pretty
he's
good.
He's done well. But it's there on Amazon Prime right now. It's just come out, and it's great.
I will watch that because I love Henry Rollins. I've, in fact, got a couple of his books. Some of them are collected collected stories that he's told in the past on his live shows. I've never been to see him live. I would love to.
If he comes here, we'll go.
Oh, big time, yeah. I like him as an actor as well. He was in season 2 of Sons of Anarchy as a neo-Nazi. Right. He's fabulous in that. And my first experience of Henry Rollins was it was when he was a solo musician after he left Black Flag, and there was a song of he did called Liar. He goes, "I'm a liar," and the first time I saw it was on Beavis and Butthead.
Nice.
Beavis and Butthead ripping into Henry Rollins.
There we go.
And I've loved him ever since that day.
Well, that's our outro music sorted.
Yes.
He's so charismatic.
Oh, he's amazing.
He has a serious presence to him.
He's looks fucking hard as well. He's built like a brick.
He would literally look like he'd stamp on my neck and make me apologise for it.
Yeah, he's a bat. I wouldn't want to piss him off, but he's also the nicest guy in the world, so it's a weird one. And I bet he loves a McDonald's.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't. I think
bet he
vegan.
Doesn't. Yeah.
Oh, he would hate it. No,
we'll have his.
we'll take the McFlurries off him, won't we?
Come on then, Ben. What have you got for us this time?
I'm finishing with a band called Mutoid Man.
Oh.
They're a metal band from Brooklyn who formed in 2012 as a side project for members of Cave In and Converge. Since then, they've released an EP and 2 albums, most recently the record War Moans, which was released in 2017. We saw them recently, Mark. We saw them supporting Mastodon.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, and they were great fun, good rock and roll band, even though the fact that their sound fucked up, didn't it? Remember when the guitar just wasn't working and they had to fix it in the middle of
the
show?
That was members of Cave In.
Cave In and Converge, yeah.
Fucking, that album, Antennae or whatever it was in the 90s, was fucking incredible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the lead singer of Mutoid Man is the lead.
What?
From Cave In as well, yeah. And it's the drummer from Converge. And they were fantastic live. They put on a really good show. It's just really old school rock and roll. Their sound is pretty varied across their 2 albums. Some of it is kind of post-hardcore and punky. Some of it is more prog metal and old-fashioned rock. The bands I'd most compare them to, I would say, are Red Fang, which is a band that Mark and I love.
Unbelievable.
And another band, a sludge metal band called Torch. I don't know if you're familiar with Torch.
I've never heard Torch.
No, they're fantastic. Really great band. Get involved with those. Their new album, or recent album, War Moans, is fantastic. Get involved in it. If you want to get a dose of what they're all about, what they sound like, check out the songs Kiss of Death and Microaggressions. Kiss of Death also has a pretty good video as well. Find that on YouTube. Their songs are such short bursts of fury as well. So this most recent album, I think it's 12 songs long, but it's only 38 minutes long, the album.
How it should be sometimes.
Exactly, you know. Get in, rock, get out.
Unlike Corey, who does 22 songs of absolute
genius.
With a concept.
Yeah, genius, but sometimes you need the opposite.
Of course.
And it was really great seeing them play live. It was the first time I'd seen them live, and I'm only really starting to get into them. But they're one of those bands that can translate what you hear on record to the live arena. His vocals are on point. Both
yeah,
on record
they were really
live.
Good when we saw him a few weeks ago.
They were fantastic. He's got a great rock and roll voice, and he really, really delivers. And I think they're a lot of fun just getting into them, and I think people should get into them as well.
Fabulous.
They're one of those bands that don't look like how they should sound. So he was just, he had like a nice neat haircut. Yeah. He just had a t-shirt on. He didn't look rock or grungy or anything. And it was quite surprising when he started screaming and really fucking giving it some, he was like, you're not meant to sound like that in my head.
Look like he's about to do your taxes.
Yeah, it's weird. It's true.
And you could tell that he was a pro and that he's been in bands for 20 years, because when they did have the guitar snafu, there was something wrong with the mixing desk, I think. He didn't sort of shrink, he didn't panic, he was just chilling, laughing with the crowd, having, you know, making a bit of fun out of it, and then the guitar started working again, and he started rocking again.
They got the crowd warmed up so well for that gig, and then you had Kavelattak and Mastodon. What a gig.
Hell of a bill, those three together, and Kavelattak were unreal as well.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Fabulous. So yeah, check out Mutoid Man.
Fabulous.
So what have social media got for us? My wallet has taken a beating after those Funko announcements and those big Macs. Yeah. So
before we get into this week's, though, Gemma, did you pick up that Miyazaki World that we talked about last week?
I'm going to get it for my birthday.
Get involved. Yep. I started reading it this week. It's fantastic.
I cannot wait to get stuck into it. And after off air, I think a few days ago, we were talking and you were saying you have to get it. So I will be getting it.
It's so good. So thank you to Daniel Turner for recommending that to us last week.
Thank you, Daniel.
This week's, first of all, Mehmet Mustafa at CineGeek18 said, Alita Battle Angel. Fucking bonkers. Strange as fuck, so freaking awesome. Sounds like he liked it.
The thing is, right, James Cameron has kind of tarnished a lot of his films because he just keeps doing shite and 3D and Avatar 71 and I can't be arsed. But everyone is saying that this is brilliant.
It didn't really grab my attention, if I'm absolutely honest, but like Mark, too many people have told me it's worth a watch.
And Cameron only produced it, he didn't direct it.
True. It's his name, always promoting it.
It's one of those that I will watch it when it invariably appears on Amazon Prime or Netflix, but I shan't go to the cinema.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have to.
I was surprised by Amazon Prime yesterday. Hereditary's on there already. What? I just thought that was quite quick.
Oh, I'll watch that.
Yes. Oh, have a wank.
On Instagram, Tiffin Landscape Construction has said, the book I Heard You Paint Houses by Charles Brandt. It's the book that Scorsese is turning into his next film, The Irishman. A very good read.
Wow.
I will get that before the film comes out for sure, and I'll have a read of that.
Wow, that sounds great.
Wow, we were.
The Ginch at Paul Ginch has said the retro stylings of the Nintendo Entertainment System on Nintendo Switch Online. For $3.49 a month, you can play classic NES games like Double Dragon, Zelda, and Super Mario 3. Oh. Kids will think it's shit, but I love it, he says. I've got it as well on my Switch, and it is fully worth the $3.49 because each month or every few weeks they add new games, old school NES games that you can play. All you have to pay is that. And a monthly subscription.
I need to get a Switch so badly.
I do love that everyone's got these, like, this is a brand new HD, and everyone's sitting there playing Double Dragon.
Yeah. I love it. It's like, I've got my PS4, blah, 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 and all I ever sit is play Toe Jam and Earl and Golden Axe. Yeah. It's so bad, isn't it?
Paid 60 quid for Super Mario Odyssey, and I'm playing fucking Mario 3.
But when he turns into the raccoon in that game, pretty, that's good. Awesome. Yeah.
Did you see the news this week that Zelda Link's Awakening is going to come to Nintendo as a brand new kind of 3D format?
I did see that, yes. Yes.
I remember playing that a lot on my Game Boy as a kid.
I would love a McDonald's and a bit of gaming right now on my Switch.
That's Nintendo's Switch.
Should we bin off the fact that it's Sunday and we've got to go work tomorrow?
Let's.
Just go and get a shitload of nuggets and play Switch all night.
Oh my God, count me in.
Do you know what? The only thing that would make that better would be some mead from Lime Bay Winery.
Oh my God.
Do you know what?
I polished off my black cherry bottle the other night.
How good was it?
Oh my, it's the best thing I've ever had.
It's great, but beautiful. Now we've got none, it's quite sad.
I'm very sad.
I think if we could have violins in the background right now.
You know what would make that better?
What?
More mead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm in. I feel the need for more mead. We'll probably hopefully get some now.
I touch wood. Let's move on. Johnny Edwards on Facebook has said, Black Peaks are on tour with Foxjaw. Went to watch them in Bridge End last Friday. Superb. Funny you should say that, Johnny, because we saw them the day after in Milton Keynes, didn't we?
We did. Absolutely phenomenal.
Tremendous stuff.
Yes.
And we were right at the front like fucking teenagers, weren't we?
Oh, literally front row. Cute. It's insane. We went with my friend Nick and Darren and Donna. And I'll say this now. Ben, you're kind of on the fence about them. You like them. You've heard them in the car.
Yeah,
I've drilled
them
onto you like I do with Fries. But you have to admit, that live show, it was like watching them in your flat. It was mad.
It's a great venue, the Crawford Arms in Milton Keynes. It's basically a rock pub with a back room that they've kitted out really well. Really good sound system and stuff. But it's really intimate. And they're the right sort of band to play that venue. And you're right. It did feel like you're in the living room. You're right up close with them. The vocalist, what's his name?
Will.
His vocals are on point.
Unbelievable.
They're so crisp, so clear live. I really enjoyed them.
It was such a good night. And then we went to they had like a dance night next door, rock night, and they played Limp Bizkit. And me and Ben were drinking all night with Nick and Darren and Donna, just literally rocking out to Limp Bizkit.
It was amazing. It was a new metal and emo night.
Oh, mate. It was like
loving
Rolling and My
all
Way.
Of it, all of
They had Corn,
Bowling for Soup,
Papa Roach.
Yeah, it was great. It was fucking great. Bowling for Soup. We were just dancing like
Girl
idiots.
Girl of the Bad Guys one?
That's the one.
Yeah. Was Stacey's mom on there? Stacey's
they
mom.
Didn't play that.
Sadly not. We should have requested it.
Bullshit.
But we drank a lot of beers and danced to some old school tunes.
It was good.
It's a good night.
Good lads. Yeah.
Gavin at Gav McHugh has said, just finished reading Wraiths of the Broken Land by S. Craig Zahler of Bone Tomahawk and Brawling Sober 99. It's every bit as brutal as his films, and it's also superbly written and has great characters. I didn't know he wrote novels.
Me neither.
Jesus Christ.
But I'm getting them.
That's what you're getting straight away.
Hell to the yes.
After your nuggets, that's the one.
Oh, yeah. On Instagram, Screening Violets has said, the newish Arrow release, Dave Made a Maze, about a guy who makes a maze out of cardboard in his living room, then gets lost in it when it takes on a life of its own. Very funny, very odd, but pretty original. Mark, you're our Arrow guru. Yeah. Have you got this one?
I haven't, but I'm going to now, because that just sounds way out.
Yeah,
that sounds insane,
bizarre.
Yeah, but I like it. Just you summarising it then makes me go, yep, I can get on board.
Yeah. Matthew Schoaf at Matty the Ghost has said, definitely the remake of Resident Evil 2.
Oh,
so
man.
Talking about game remakes, a lot of people are saying this is great. Was it Darren the other day saying how good it was?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like you just get sucked into it, and it's completely, I thought it was just a rehash of the original, like they did with The Last of Us, but it's not.
Yeah.
They've done a whole new game out of it, and people are saying it's outstanding, but if I buy it, I'll lose 6 months of my life.
Yeah.
My other half's been playing it, and he's just saying, like, the attention to detail with all the graphs is phenomenal. It's absolutely beautiful.
Oh,
also scary.
But it's not a NES game, so
No. Well,
the graphics are too good. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Rory Greenfield on Twitter has said, Heartbeat Loud, a great music-inspired film with Nick Offerman and Kiersey Clemons. Part coming-of-age, part drama, with a soundtrack of entirely original music that's superb. This film played the rounds at the festivals last year, I think, but I've not seen it myself. Have either of you seen
Me
it?
Me neither, no.
Ron Swanson?
Yes, Ron Swanson, indeed.
And we've not seen
Nick
it.
Nick Offerman, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Ron Swanson with a guitar.
Jesus. It's like an indie folk musical, so it's not really up my street. It looks like something you would like, Gemma.
I probably would end up like really
that
enjoying
wasn't a diss.
No.
He's
shit,
got a
you'll
point.
You'll like it, yeah.
Fuck off.
On Facebook, Eric Menger, graphic novel, Green River Killer, a true detective story by Jeff Jensen and Jonathan Case. Now, when I saw this, I was like, okay, the Green River Killer is a real-life serial killer, and they've made a graphic novel about it. I thought, well, that's interesting. But then the name rang a bell. I was like, Jeff Jensen? I looked it up, and apparently Jeff Jensen, his dad, was a guy called Tom Jensen, who was the actual real-life detective on the Green River serial killer case.
Fucking hell.
But that wasn't the thing that I remembered. It was that Jeff Jensen used to, or maybe still does, work for Entertainment Weekly. And he used to write the Lost reports. So whenever I would watch an episode of Lost, I would go on EW.com and read Jeff Jensen's reports. And
wow.
He'd always have the first interviews with Hurley and all them guys.
Wow.
And he'd be the first one to break, you know, the Easter eggs that had appeared.
Bloody
so when I saw
hell.
Jeff Jensen, I was like, why do I know his name?
That's cool.
I used to read his Lost reports. But apparently he's written this graphic novel based on his real-life dad.
I am
investigating a serial killer.
I want to get in on that.
See how much we're buying from just this feature on social media. I'm skinned.
I just say like, cha-ching, cha-ching,
cha-ching. It's not good.
And then finally, Thomas Young at TomBomb17 has said, Russian Doll on Netflix. An engrossing series starring Natasha Lyonne as she gets caught in a loop and has to relive the same day again and again. Every episode, the stake gets higher, which leads to an incredible finale.
Oh.
I've seen it. All of you guys seen it?
I have now, yeah. Last week, I watched the last bit.
Fantastic, isn't it?
2 days to watch.
Yeah.
I love that Natasha Lyonne is... She's not likable. And you don't get a lot of female characters that aren't likable. Mm-hmm. So it's so refreshing to see something like this.
You say she's not likable. I fell in love with her.
Yeah.
She's absolutely. An asshole.
I love her.
And I like the fact that she was an asshole.
Yeah, but I just love her.
I love her. I think she's great. And the whole, you know, time loop thing has been done to death ever since Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Every man and their dog has tried to do a variation on this. And it's very difficult to make it original and put your own spin on it. But I think they've really succeeded
in
this. It
works really well.
I also love the soundtrack to this because it's very synthy, very kind of electro. And there's one particular song, which is a Pretenders remake called I Go to Sleep by a lady called Annika. I've had that on loop for about 2 weeks now. And it's so haunting, but it just fits the story so bloody well.
Is it actually 2 weeks or have you just been playing the same day over and over again?
Nice.
What?
Time loop gag.
Wow.
You see what I did there?
Oh my lord!
Yeah, bitch.
You murked me. You murked me good.
Ned Ryerson? Is that you?
So please keep your recommendations coming in. You can get us on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast or email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Another good one.
It's been full on, I reckon. Yeah. I like my energy levels. I felt we've all been on it.
Yeah, hyper.
But we
hyper.
Need milkshake.
And
we need
milkshake.
McFlurries and nuggets.
No, I want to get my nuggets.
Never
on.
Ever do McFlurry and milkshake. It's one or the other.
Yeah. I don't know. Screw the rules.
Really?
Should we go to McDonald's and just ask for one of each?
Yeah.
Yes,
and I don't
please.
Mean those two things. I mean one of everything they have.
Yeah. I'd be up for that.
And remember, you didn't choose the nug life. The Nug Life chose you.
True that.
It's true.
True that. So let's wrap this shit up because I genuinely am going to McDonald's.
He's not lying.
Sharpish. So what have we got coming up on the next episode then? Mark, what's the topic?
It's going to be our top three movie dads.
Yeah. Ooh.
Hell of a lot to choose from there, right?
Yeah. Millions.
Yeah. So fucking many.
Men with kids.
But after the one that we did on mums, I had so much fun with that. And I love reading on the social media. To know now we're doing dads.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
It's only fair, isn't
it?
I guess.
Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
Oh, well, I mean, we're going to have a container for Mark on the episode, but we will be masturbating over John Hughes.
Ooh.
Mr. Rated.
It's insane.
So many good films.
So many.
That is going to be genuinely really tough.
It is.
Yeah. Really tough.
Lube will be needed.
You're going to be exhausted, mate.
Spit.
Extraordinary. No need for that. Filth. Speaking of filth, that was this week's rewatch. And next rewatch will be Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. 30
oh my God.
Fucking years.
That's
since
amazing.
That
That's so good.
Insane.
I can't wait already. And that's, you know, like sometimes you got to do a rewatch, like when we did Brick and it was a chore.
Yeah.
Like, oh, fuck's sake. Now,
did you actually watch it?
No. But like,
there we
now,
go.
It's
That'll
like
explain.
Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it for years.
No, me neither. It's
Can't
be
wait.
So good. Mark, what film are we reviewing though?
It's going to be Fighting With My Family, the film based on the life of Paige from WWE.
That's right, yeah. Produced by Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Written and directed by Stephen Merchant, of all people.
Yeah, Nick Frost.
Nick Frost is in it, Lena Headey. Good cast.
It's gotten good reviews at the moment.
Yeah, as of this conversation, it's 92% positive on Rotten Tomatoes.
Say what?
I wasn't expecting that.
No.
Wowzers.
And of course, we're wrestling fans here, and we're fans of good movies in general, so we're looking forward to that one very much. We will have all the other usual goodies you're used to. We're going to give away a ridiculous amount of prizes, aren't we, Mark?
I think we should cut down a bit, because we're getting too much. Like, did you hear that one today? How long did that take me to read out?
Well,
next time it'll be like, we got a Funko of Paige done. You know what I mean? We'll see. But yeah, we're going to give away a good amount of
a
stuff.
A good amount of prizes. Yeah. And we'll bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Lots of good stuff. See you in 2 weeks. 'Cause I'm alive.